Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound for pound best radio show around the world, it's Leave It In The Ring.
Well, welcome to another edition of Leave It In The Ring. We got a round table in the process right now. We're going to have a bunch of writers and personalities call in and give us their take and breakdown of the upcoming fight between Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati on March 13th. I know I got my co-host 916 Chris and Strikecart. What's going on, fellas? How's everything going with you guys?
Great. I'm hanging out watching a Karate Kid marathon.
Karate Kid marathon. Oh, man. Okay, Daniel. Yeah, I haven't seen one of those flicks in some time, man. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's back in, I think that movie came out when I was in seventh grade. I was in junior high already. And I remember that was like a whole fab that, where everybody wanted to learn karate at one point. Because you really thought that eagle stance was going to really work on the playground yard against somebody. And then finally when somebody used it and they got knocked out, then you went back and thinking like, hey, you know what? I don't think these movies are really that realistic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Not really good for the balance, that stance.
Not really good for the balance at all, man. You know, but anyway, so how you doing, Strike? How's everything going on with you, brother?
I'm just hanging in, man, you know, so I'm here, and that's what's most important, but, you know, always a lot of work.
Always so. A lot of work, man. Tell me about it. You know, we got a packed show today. We have a lot of people that are going to be coming through and talking to us a little bit about what's going on. Their take, really honestly, about this mega matchup between these two warriors in the welterweight division. You know, obviously, Joshua Calati was not the first pick for Manny Pacquiao to step into the ring with. This was all due because of the steroid scandal. You know, go in there and get a needle in your arm in order for you to get in the ring with me, Floyd Mayweather Jr. So that didn't pan out, obviously, for the fight fans that were looking for that showdown, but it obviously panned out for the hardcore fight fans that were really honestly wanting to see this fight between Joshua Calati. If anybody, Joshua is the one that was even more surprised than anybody else, right, Strike?
Yeah, he was very surprised. I know from talking to him personally that he didn't believe it until the press conference. He didn't let himself buy into the fact that it was actually going to be happening. And I couldn't be happier for him. I think he deserves to be on this level.
When you get a guy like that, you know, the thing is, when you get a guy like that, that's a road warrior and willing to step into the ring with anybody at any given time, you know, whether it's a two-week, three-week notice, and a guy that's really honestly, a lot of people have not even took notice that Joshua Calati is a very clean fighter, meaning that I'm not talking about, you know, steroids. I'm talking about as in gym rat, a guy that stays in the gym, that's consistently working on his craft, a guy that, you know, takes a lot of pride in what he does in the ring. So this is not a guy that you're going to find at a nightclub or a strip club or anywhere else. You know, he does his road work. He gets into the gym. He stays conditioned just in case something does pop up. And the reason being is because of the fact that he's not your everyday pick for a promoter or a management team to say, hey, why don't we get this guy and put him in the ring?
Right. Yeah, he doesn't even seem to be the first pick of his own promoter, other than as a stepping stone for his superstars. So he's definitely, he knows that, and he's always ready to be in a fight, just like he said. He's had more than a few fights fall apart in the past year, and it turned out to be to his benefit in the end, and now he's getting the biggest fight anybody could get. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I couldn't be happier for Joshua. I think he deserves to be on this stage.
Absolutely, you know, and I know that, you know, right away in your interview, I was listening to the whole interview, and he had said, well, you know, you had asked him, first off, you know, what does it mean for his people in Ghana if he wins, and he said, "Oh, celebration, celebration for quite some time for
yeah, it was
weeks
like a,
to come in."
He said a whole week of joy is what it would bring. It's just a celebration for a straight week. So
absolutely,
yeah.
Man,
that's pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I think we got one of our guests on the line right now. Area code 858. I think we got Felipe De Leon. Is that you, brother? Area code 858. Are you there, brother?
You mean 856?
856. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was saying 858. What's up, brother? What's your name and what's on your mind?
My name is Thomas Cornflake Lamont. I'm a professional boxer, looking to make my pro debut next week or this Saturday in Atlantic City, New Jersey. What's on my mind? I'm kind of happy for Joshua Kalati. I think he deserves it. Do I think he's overmatched in Manny Pacquiao? Maybe, but with the toughness that Joshua Kalati brings, it will be a tough fight for Manny Pacquiao. For the first, couple rounds, then I think Manny Pacquiao will start to get used to him. His speed's gonna come into effect, and it might go a distance, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a short night.
Let me ask you this, okay? Because obviously, a lot of people feel the way you're feeling right now that he may be a little overmatched. Talking about Kalati here, what does Kalati need to do though in order to secure himself a victory? What are some of the key points that he has to establish to try to make an upset, to create an upset here?
Figure out Manny Pacquiao style. Nobody has done that. Manny Pacquiao he'll throw punches in any different direction. He'll throw punches while he's hopping 3 feet in the air. I believe that Joshua Kalati, he's gonna have to try to be the quicker man. He's definitely, in my opinion, he's definitely the stronger man. I think he's stronger than Manny Pacquiao. Most people will probably disagree with me, but I believe he's stronger, and that's what he just needs to use. He needs a counterpunch, go to the body. Manny Pacquiao, he's a wild fighter. He's going to come in, leaving his body open. He's going to throw wild punches, and Joshua Kalati just has to fight a smart fight.
You think in any way that Joshua Kalati's jab is underrated from a lot of people? Because it seems that if I was in the Joshua Kalati corner in his camp taking views of his videos of previous fights, it seemed that Marquez was able to hold him off and keep him at bay with a jab. Miguel Cotto, for the first round and even on the third round, was able to do damage and able to keep him, at a distance with a jab. If Joshua's camp was able to witness that, wouldn't that be the key there to hold that awkwardness that Manny Pacquiao and speed that Manny brings into the ring?
I think so.
I know that this. I got a question. And obviously this is you having your pro debut in New Jersey. You said,
yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this. When you being that you're a pro, if you're going into the pro rankings now, okay, and you're seeing certain things that are happening in the boxing world. One is some guys that, let's say, what weight division are you? Deciding to venture in right now?
154 pounds, middleweight.
Okay, perfect. Perfect example here. 154. Now, you get guys sometimes that are going to be fighting your weight. They're probably about 6'1", 6'2", okay, if that. But they're really honestly more of a light heavyweight, okay? So that means that day of a fight night, they're walking in the ring about 175, even sometimes in cruiserweight. Now, Manny Pacquiao's team and Freddie Roach have always, stepping in, not always, for the past two fights, not the second fight not happening with Floyd Mayweather, but with Miguel Cotto, they had him walk in at 145, okay? Then with Floyd Mayweather, the stipulation was 147, and then I believe it was a 10,000 fine above any weight, any pound that goes above 147. With Joshua Kalati, they're not asking for anything like that. Is that in some way of saying we're not concerned about you blowing up in weight because we're really honestly don't see you that competitive in the ring with us?
Maybe, but that I think that's a bad move by Team Pacquiao, only because, like I just said, Joshua Kalati, that's a hard hitting guy. I was there ringside when he fought Antonio Margarito in Atlantic City, And that's a tough cookie. You know, I just think, yeah, you're absolutely right, and I think Manny Pacquiao's team's making a bad decision. A bad decision.
You know, I think so, too, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on Joshua Kalati on the fact that he does. The Grandmaster does bring some mad skills into the ring, and really, honestly, if any time you could smell an upset, this is obviously one of those fights that we could have an upset. I mean, yeah, let's not take nothing away from Manny Pacquiao, you know, the speed, the power. You know, having that sensational knockout over Ricky Hatton, but really, Ricky left himself open, had the style to be taken
yeah.
out.
Ricky Hatton's not no Joshua Kalati.
Absolutely. You know, so what I'm going with this is that does Manny Pacquiao have that one-punch power? I don't think so. I think he has to have volumes and volumes of shots in order to make you submit to what he wants. You know, so, you know, I know a lot of people talk about Manny's power. If anything, it's the shots that you can't see that makes him really, honestly, a lot more amazing, because I don't think it's his power. I think it's his accuracy. And you're not being able to see the shots to block them, that kind of makes you fall apart. And then at one point, your mental game falls apart, and then you're like, you know what? I cannot see this kid.
You're absolutely
right. I can't do
right.
anything with them.
You're absolutely right. In Manny Pacquiao's case, it's speed equals power. That's probably been his ego since, you know, day one. He's super, 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 super lightning fast. Has more energy than, you know, Donkey Kong, and he's jumping around everywhere. And, you know, yeah, the speed equals power. Do I think he has power? Yeah, he has power. You know, he nearly, you know, I thought I saw Ricky Hatton die right in front of me, you know, when he got knocked out like that. But does he have enough power to knock out Joshua Kalati, a fighter like Joshua Kalati, who's fighting for the pride of his country, with, you know, same with Manny Pacquiao, but, you know, Joshua Kalati has been less fortunate, you know, the way he's been growing up and everything. No, I don't think nothing knocks out Joshua Kalati. If anything, if there's going to be a stoppage, a TKO or anything, Manny Pacquiao is just going to stop him with speed. The ref's going to have to stop it, you know.
And I think you may be right. And I think a lot of people are kind of betting on that. Go ahead, brother, and state your name one more time. And when is your pro debut, and where's it going to be at?
Thomas LaManna. I'm fighting at the Tropicana in Atlantic City, New Jersey. This Saturday, this coming Saturday, on the Shimon Alvarez Alexis Camacho undercard.
Man, that's great, brother. Well, keep us informed. You know, send me an email so I can keep updated with you at leavingandring@gmail.com, brother. I appreciate you calling in and talking to us.
No problem. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, you know, a lot of scenarios can absolutely come into this fight, and that's what makes this fight so, I mean, this makes a great matchup, Strike. I mean, a lot of things can happen, you know. There's a lot of opinions, obviously, and you know what? I have to say, and I think we've said this before, that if anything, this is really honestly the this is going to be the first prime welterweight that Manny Pacquiao is going to be stepping in the ring with, right?
Absolutely. It's funny to me, a lot of people, and I won't name anybody because there's a lot of them, but a lot of names come to mind who have time and again in the past year and a half or so picked against Manny Pacquiao. And now, when Joshua Kalati's time comes up, now's the time they decide not to pick against him. And I'm saying to myself, out of all the guys he's fought recently, I think this is the one that actually has a real chance to do it. I mean, not that Cotto didn't have a chance. I'm not saying that that wasn't a fight to contemplate for a little while. But in my mind, Kalati has a better chance than Cotto did. I have to think a lot harder about this fight.
You know, so. And it's funny that you say that. It's like, you know, with Cotto, okay, a prime example is Cotto, you know. Yeah, you know, the Cotto that was stepping in, everybody was really hesitant. I mean, he had the tools. Obviously, you could say he had the tools to hold Manny Pacquiao at bay and do exactly what he's been able to do in previous fights with Shane Mosley, even for almost 8 rounds with Antonio Margarito. So you were on the fence with that fight there. You weren't sure whether if you're going to jump off onto the gravel or jump back onto the green, you know? So a lot of people were like, wow, I don't know, man. I think Cotto should be able to. But the mental part of the game of his and his side was really honestly tarnished at the moment. So that dark cloud was really kind of hovering over on that fight. And that's why a lot of fight fans, after the fight had completed, after the victory for Manny Pacquiao on his, you know, his win over Cotto, you had a lot of fight fans go, well, you know, Miguel Cotto was a shot. With Joshua Calati, there is no excuse here. You got a very well-healthy welterweight, strong-minded welterweight stepping in the ring March 13th. And I believe we got our correspondent for Max Boxing, Gabriel Montoya, on the line with us. Brother, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm enjoying the Sunday. It's a nice day. I heard over there in Southern California it's been raining.
Yeah, but today is sunny skies, man, blue sky, and just perfect. It's a little bit of wind, but, you know, I don't mind that. I mean, it's a beautiful day out. Perfect day to sit inside and write a column.
Hey, Gabe, let me ask you this, because obviously Tony lied to me. They said it never rains in Southern California, brother. What's going on with that?
What's that?
I said, oh, Tony, they lied to us, man. They had that cut that said never rains in Southern California. Well, I've been over there in Southern California a couple times to cover the fights. Every time I go, I think 10 out of, you know, 6 out of 10, it's been raining.
I guess they didn't account for global warming. I don't know.
I guess not, man.
The pole shifting, you know.
Yeah. And, well, before I get your take, Gabriel, about Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati on March 13th in Texas, I want to kind of talk about some other things that are happening out there in the boxing world, because, you know, I'm always interested in what your thoughts on, and especially in your mailbags. I go to your mailbag. I look at that religiously every time to see what's going on in your thoughts and what you have and your takes. I want to talk a little bit about Victor Ortiz. He had his, Friday night fight. Well, no, it was Thursday night at the Club Nokia Sports. What was it? Fox Sports. What was your assessment about him? What did you think about his performance against Alatorre?
I thought it was very tentative, very tight. You know, but Alatorre is a guy that, you know, he had 8 losses, never been stopped. And usually, even when you hear this guy's never been stopped and he's an opponent, that's generally the setup for this guy to stop him. And Ortiz, you know, he did his job. It took him a while. He said he hurt his hand between somewhere in the second and third rounds. Although when he showed us his hand, it didn't really look all that swollen, especially compared to Charles Huerta, who injured both of his hands in the fight. And I mean, the guy looked like he was wearing a couple catcher's mitts. It was pretty ridiculous. But, you know, I thought Ortiz looked good. He looks tentative to me. He looks like a guy that doesn't want to be in a firefight. Is maybe protecting a chin that's less, you know, it's not really a suspect anymore. It's actually been convicted of not being very good. And so I think he was worried. But it's a very negative fighter in that there was not a lot of offense coming out of him. He's kind of shifty. He was looking to tie up and kind of make it a little bit ugly or stay away. And his defensive skills, I don't care that he looked like, you know, my fat uncle. You know, the guy had some skills, particularly defensively. And so you could easily see early on, okay, this is why this guy never gets knocked out, because he doesn't engage. And I think Victor's best strength, and he would probably agree, is that he's a good counter puncher. I think that's what his natural instinct is to get you to attack, and then he goes after you. And when there's no offense coming, you know, you really can't get the counter game going. So it was tough, but I think it was a good fight for Victor in terms of rounds, in terms of dealing with the adversity and really the pressure of, I got to knock this guy out. And then, you know, eventually he got him out of there.
Let me ask you this, Gabriel, because I'm going to tell you what I saw that night. I saw that, I don't know whether if there was something affecting his legs. Was he weight drained? It seemed like he didn't have his feet under him. He was jumping a lot more than usual. Having all the tools that this guy's gifted with, his jab seems to be the key element of winning fights, but it seems like he likes to neglect that jab. He's got a, you know, a very fast, stiff jab. It looked like, too, that they were trying something new with Victor in this fight, you know, with Alatorre, which I thought that was really puzzling to me. Now, the thing is this, how loyal does a fighter should stay to their trainers when something is not working out correctly? To me, it looks like even the corner seemed a little off in trying to give him instructions. They were telling him he looked good. Really, honestly, if you're trying to make a comeback fight and get the fans that have turned their backs on you to forgive you, this was really the wrong message to send out to them.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, this is going to sound shallow, but if you're trying to look good and you're trying to, you know, put on a showcase fight, don't fight a guy that looks like he's 50 and out of shape. You know, it looked like a physical mismatch. I mean, you got to fight a guy that looks like a boxer, that maybe doesn't have the best record. Most of the fans won't know the record anyways if they show up. That's the kind of guy you fight. I mean, if that's what you're looking for. Now, if you're looking for rounds, then you do get a guy like Alator, who may not be the most pretty to look at, but he's going to give you a tough little fight and kind of expose some certain parts of your game and make you work at it. But, you know, the trainer-fighter thing is very tricky. You know, it's chemistry, you know, and I'm not sure if his corner's telling him the right thing. You know, I think telling a fighter he looks good, it just kind of depends on the situation. For me, I would rather just take constructive criticism and hear, this is what you're doing wrong, or, you know, this is what you need to do. This is what I see that the guy's giving you that you're not taking advantage of. You know, granted, I'm not a trainer, I'm just a writer, but that's what I would like to see. I haven't actually listened to the telecast because I was there. But, you know, with Victor, yeah, he was hopping around a lot. What I'm seeing a lot from him now is one shot and then he moves away, one shot and then he moves away. The combinations kind of came later in the fight, and I'm not really sure why. I think he got a little impatient. And actually, what he did tell me at the fight was that it was the seventh round he tested him. And the trainer actually said, go out and see what he's got left. Go see if you can knock him out, and then we'll go from there. And so that's what that seventh round was about. Was him trying to see, you know, have I softened him up. But he didn't really even go to the body that much in the fight. So I don't see how they really had set up any sort of knockout at all. And he just kind of tried to overpower him. To me, Victor looks like a fighter without an identity. His jab reminds me a lot of Shane Mosley's in that it flips out. Very rarely do you see like a telephone pole type jab from him. It's just kind of a range finder. And I think a good fighter is going to come over the top with that and land like Marcos Maidana did, you know, a straight right hand and drop him. Or at least, you know, get him on the back foot on the defensive. So I think Victor's a long way to go. I think they anointed him a star way too early. You know, he's still, in my mind, kind of a prospect. And it kind of shows in that they're going after Nate Campbell, who's not really a 140-pounder and very long in the tooth. And I think a guy that actually could give Victor a lot of trouble, considering what Alator was able to do.
I think so, too. And I thought maybe that was going to be my next question, was maybe rushing him a little too quick. I mean, he does have the skills, but is he seasoned enough to use those skills against a crafty man like Nate Campbell, the Galaxy Warrior? You know, if you guys weren't able to tune into that fight, Victor did succeed in stopping Alator in the 10th round. And really, honestly, it looked like maybe – I mean, there's another thing that I kind of caught on. I'm not really sure if you agree with me this, but it seems to me that Victor never learned how to fight in the inside.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. I don't really see much of a – there's a little bit of a mid-range game. There's not an inside game. It just ties up, and he looks for a couple shots in there, but he's not very comfortable with it, you know. A guy that I think teaches it as well as anybody, you know, is Joe Goosen. You look at his fighters – when they go on the inside, they're not tying up. They're kind of, you know, they shell up and they put their head on one side or the other and their shoulder on one side or the other, and they're working uppercuts and they're looking to keep their hands free so they can work. Victor seems very insecure inside there. Kind of grabs on with one hand, wails away with the other one, or just ties up altogether and then, you know, resets at long range. So yeah, I think there's a development there. There's certainly all the tools. He's got power. He's got good speed. He's got size. For that weight class, and he could easily move up to 147. I almost think he should in some sense. But I think when you rush a guy, what he looks like, we were talking about this last night. I was watching the fight for Doug Fisher and a few other people. He's thinking way too much, and that might be the problem with the rushing. You could see him like kind of calculating, should I do this, should I do that? It's not automatic, and it's not fluid, and that might be, you know, the change in trainers. He had one trainer for years and years and years, and then all that promotional stuff happened, and he dropped him. And I just question whether or not, you know, he's ever rebounded from that. You know, the trust that goes there, that they know who you are and know all your strengths and weaknesses, that are just building you up. All those things, the solid advice and the rapport, those things go away when you change trainers. And, you know, you can look at, there's a lot of guys out there. Vonis Martirosyan has had like four different trainers. You know, he had Freddie Roach. He's had a few other guys working with him in that camp. Then he went to Ronnie Shields and he went back. And he looks like the same kind of thing. He's thinking too much. He's bouncing around the ring, and he doesn't quite know who he is as a fighter yet.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, man, you know, I knowing Victor, you know, and you never try to get an attachment with these fighters. You know, you try to keep it at always at a professional level. But Victor is just one of those type of kids that you just can't help not like. You know, so hopefully Victor doesn't hear this as we're bagging on you, Vic. We're not, you know, just want to see you progress the right way to become a world champion, because I think he has the charisma. He has the face of boxing, you know, and it's all part of the game of a learning process. You know, I was I went to a restaurant the other night, and I was a Chinese restaurant, and I opened up my fortune, and you know, because you know, after dinner they give you that little fortune cookie. So I'm always curious about, okay, what's and hold for me. And it said, engage in group activities that further your transformation. Well, I would love to give him that little piece of paper to Victor Ortiz. You need to engage with a better chap that can give you that better transformation, you know. We got some boxing news coming up. We're going to get Gabriel Montoya's, you know, insight and his breakdown of the upcoming showdown March 13th. But we do got the stand and fight rundown news. And then we have a new thing, too, that we're on the process of working on, guys. We have a UK correspondent. He's going to be bringing us all the UK news, along with some UK interviews that are happening over there with the prize fighting. I know there's a tournament. It's almost like the six-man tourney, but it's over there in the UK. And really, honestly, the Americans have not caught on to it, and I heard that this is one hell of a contest. So, Gabriel, let's move on. You know, let's get your rundown about Joshua Kalati versus Manny Pacquiao. Who wins this fight and why?
First, I want to jump back to the fortune cookie, and you should add in bed to the end of that one, and then rethink it. Joshua Kalati, Manny Pacquiao. I think it's a tough fight. I think it's a decision fight. I think any talk of knockout should be eliminated. I mean, Manny's got tremendous power and tremendous speed that sets up that power, and I think it enhances it. And he's, you know, the angles and everything that he's doing these days is tremendous. I mean, he's just, you know, top two fighters in the world, you know, him and Floyd Mayweather. I tend to think Manny Pacquiao is the best fighter in the world, and Floyd is the best boxer in the world. But Josh Kalati is a legitimate great contender. He's got an also-ran. He's kind of like an Ike Quarte. He's good enough to be at the top, not quite good enough to beat all those top guys. But styles make fights, and sooner or later, you know, these top guys keep fighting him. He's going to find somebody that he can beat. And then Manny Pacquiao, he's got a guy that is a smallish welterweight. I think he's a true welterweight at this point, but he's smaller. He's been knocked out to the body, and Josh Kalati has a nice left hook to the body. He's got solid defense, a very quick jab, and a really nice, you know, left uppercut that, you know, I think is being game planned for, but I don't think the left hook to the body has been thought about. And he's got, you know, decent footwork. He moves, you know, works inside. His problem is he fades late. He is not offensive-minded enough. And I think people will take this the wrong way, but he thinks he's as good as all these other guys. And he is, but he thinks that he should get all the things that come along with that, like the benefit of the doubt. And he's never going to get that. He's not a star. He's not a big name. He's not a big draw. He's not the guy that's showing up there that's supposed to win. He's supposed to be the spectacular knockout, and then Manny goes and has a concert afterwards. And so he's got to fight that way. He's got to fight like he's already behind like three rounds on the cards, and come in with some passion and some immediacy. And I think it's going to be a tough problem for Manny, because I don't think they'll be able to get to his body easy. They're going to have to learn how to split that shell, which I've seen them working on in the gym, and I think they'll be able to. But it's not going to be easy, and I don't think Kalati gets knocked out. I think Manny by unanimous decision.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, obviously you said that left hook to the body is one of the keys for Joshua to get in there. But seeing that Manny has improved in and out movement, you know, darting in and being able to land when he needs to land and then pull out just in time for you not to counter on him, how does Joshua be any different from any other fighter right now from the past four previous opponents Manny stepped in to accomplish that left hook to the body?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it's going to have to come to jab. Manny has a tendency to do a couple mistakes. he leaps in with his shots, and he has a tendency to kind of, you know, pull the glove away from his chin and leave himself open. So Josh can use the jab to offset that. I think if he stays in the shell and just kind of lets Manny crash into him, it's going to be a problem. But if you can, you know, come with the jab, something behind it, that always sets up the left hook to the body. And Manny, when he gets hit, his first instinct is to attack, you know, leap in with that shot and maybe do like a, you know, his 1-2-3, you know, like 1-2-1-2, you know, coming in, jab, left, and his chin raises and it's exposed. So you can catch him there with the jab, you can catch him there with the right, and then again go down with the left of the body. It's going to have to be a counterpunch. I don't think, you know, maybe Claudio can bully Manny into the ropes and get the kind of reaction that Cotto did, where Manny says, you know, hit me to the body. Because Manny does that in the gym. He'll let people just wail on his body. He's a little, he's actually a lot superstitious about being knocked out to the body, because it's happened twice. And so he has a tendency to let people wail on him there, kind of build his confidence, build the resistance to punches there. And they also do the, you know, the rattan stick at the end of his sit-ups because of that. So I think the shot is there. I don't know. You know, I thought Cotto would take Manny the distance, and Manny proved us totally wrong. Josh is a little bit like Cotto, but he's more compact in the package that he brings in terms of defensively. So I don't know. The shot's there. I just tend to think that Josh is going to be Josh, and he's gonna peter out in the end, not have enough offense throughout, and Manny's going to have to take over and you know, in the mid to late rounds and dominate, or at least, you know, dominate in terms of volume and output.
Strikeheart, what do you think, brother? You're awfully quiet in the background there. My co-host is on the line along with Chris, and they're awfully quiet. What you guys think with Gabriel, what Gabriel's saying about this fight?
I like a lot of what he's saying. I'll add a little bit to the whole fact that Joshua Claudio is supposed to go there and lose. I think not only would he be three rounds behind on the scorecard when the bell rings, but he's basically going to lose no matter what, unless he goes for broke. I think that probably Bob Arum has stated, you know, behind the scenes, not that he even has to, that really what he wants is for Manny to win the fight no matter what. So Josh is going to need to go out there and really take the fight if he wants to win. As far as a couple more flaws that I think that in Josh's game, sometimes he drops both hands, and he does it a lot when he's getting ready to do combinations downstairs. Mm-hmm. But sometimes he'll cock a hand, and then he'll only throw with his left, and he'll leave his right hand down, even though he ain't working with it. And I think that'd be a really dangerous thing to do with a guy as quick as Manny Pacquiao. So
yeah.
I would definitely add that to flaws that I see with Joshua Claudio. Sometimes I see him with both hands down and only one hand doing something. But he's definitely got a really good body punch, a left hook to the body, as stated. His uppercut's good, but I don't think he throws it often enough, and I don't think he'll even really have too much of a chance with Pacquiao. I think he needs to exactly what Gabriel was just saying, try and get him to go up to the ropes and work on him there. I definitely don't want to see Joshua Claudio doing what he did in the sixth round with Cotto and doing that to himself, putting himself in the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, cause I feel like I have a very strong fear that this fight could get stopped early on a TKO. I expect it to go the distance. I expect Manny Pacquiao to win on the scorecards, but I have a fear that this fight will be stopped early when Joshua does something like go to the ropes or into a corner late in the fight and just sits there and shells up.
Yeah.
I mean, if he has, you know, 20 punches thrown at him and he doesn't answer back, whether or not he's hurt, he could very likely get stopped. And I don't want to – that's, like, my biggest fear of everything in this fight, is that we'll have a really bad stoppage on a great night. So.
Absolutely. You know, let me ask Gabriel. Go ahead, Gabriel.
You're talking like Manfredo and Calzaghe, that kind of thing, where – he doesn't throw back for a few seconds, and then the ref just says, screw it, even though nothing really good has landed.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very possible. I just think Claudio was brought in. This is like the Manny Pacquiao tour of America. You know, he's going to Houston, this huge, or Dallas, you know, it's this huge event. They're calling it the event. I almost think Claudy, in a sense, is brought in because he's going to give rounds. Because you can't have, like, you know, 50,000 people show up and all this build up, and then, you know, it's like a four-round fight with, you know, a bad stoppage or whatever, or just a quick stoppage. Claudy's kind of there in terms of matchmaking to give rounds and to give a little bit longer show, possibly. I don't know. That might just be a conspiracy theory, though.
You know what, though, Gabriel, I got to say, though, there's a lot of people that are thinking the same way you're thinking. I know that my producer, Art, he obviously thinks a little bit like that, because my question is this. If Joshua is able to pull this off, okay, if he is to be successful and create an upset against Manny Pacquiao on March 13th, where does Top Rank go with Joshua Calati? Because obviously he's not the cash cow for Top Rank.
Yeah, well, I think you go to a rematch, you know, that kind of – it would have to. I mean, it would be disastrous. There's so much riding on Manny Pacquiao winning, you know. There's some people that have thrown out the theory that that's why ultimately he didn't want to fight Floyd. It was, you know, not so much the blood test, but he would lose. He's got the elections coming up right now.
Right.
And, you know, granted, he's got a ton of money, but Manny takes care of a lot of people. And is very generous with his money, you know, throwing into the charities and his entourage and all kinds of people work for him. But a seat in Congress, man, that's for life. You get that job in the Philippines and, you know, you don't need to worry about anything anymore. And so it's very important for his future to continue to win and, you know, not take a drug test or whatever. I mean, that's a whole other issue I don't even want to get into. But, you know, but for him to win that seat, and he's got to win this fight to win that seat, in my opinion. So,
absolutely.
I just think, you know, I don't know where they would go with Josh Claudia. I think they would just go straight to a rematch.
I think that would be the only, I guess, the only other way of making back that money. If they would lose, you know, because they would end up losing that package with Floyd Mayweather against the winner of Floyd Mayweather versus Mosley. So I guess to make sure.
I don't think they're going to that fight.
I don't
think they're going to that fight. No, I don't think that fight happens, personally.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong about that. I hope you're wrong about that, Gabriel. You know, hey, Gabriel, it's always a pleasure, man, having you on. You know, I always appreciate you coming on, leaving in the ring, brother. Can't wait to have you on again.
Yeah, man, it's been way too long.
I know, way too long. We got to have you on at least once out of the month or twice out of the month, brother.
Yeah, sure. No problem at all. It's, you know, all I'm doing is, you know, avoiding writing my column on Sunday, you know. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, man. Well, I'll talk to you later then, brother. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, my pleasure. You guys have a good Sunday. Take care.
Thank you. I'm going to pass in our other writer from Diamond Boxing. He's a good friend of mine, Cesar Zanagonda. How you doing, brother?
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. I'm over here relaxing, enjoying this Sunday weather. You know, there's no rain. It's out, been sunny for the past couple of days. So, you know, relaxing and talking about boxing here, man. The thing that I love to do most.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I'm enjoying. I'm glad to be here, man. Just like you said, enjoying the no rain and the sunshine. And, of course, man, there's a lot to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. And actually, the next couple of months, hopefully, if everything goes the way it should be planned, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and speaking about you know, being in sports and all that, how's the soccer thing going for you, man?
Oh, it's going good, man. You know, just taking it day by day, training by training, and man, it's fun, man. You know, I'm not a young man like I used to be anymore, but just to be able to go out there and compete and sweat and you know, go out there and score some goals every now and then, man, it feels good.
This is the kind of guy right here striking Chris, is that you don't want to be anywhere where there's sun, okay, and a pool, because when he takes his shirt off, he embarrasses you. You know what I'm saying? Because the guy's all cut up and all that, and you're like, you look at yourself, you're like, damn, I shouldn't have been drinking so much. Look at this guy.
Well, thanks for the compliments, brother. Hopefully all the ladies around the pool feel the same way also,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to end up doing my impression of Chris Farley and all that. You know, like, hey, yo, where's the gym at? Yeah, over there. Okay, cool. Anyway, so, bro, let's get right into it. What's your pick against Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati on March 13th? Who do you got?
You know what? To be honest, when this fight first was made, man, I was excited. You know, like, I've told a lot of people have, you know, put me down and kind of, you know, blocked out my way of thinking. But, you know, like, I'm not going to say, like, Claudio is a pushover like everybody else is saying. You know, like, he's just in there to, you know, get some rounds going. You know, this guy's a tough guy. This guy's a guy that fought Margarito with two hurt hands, you know. He arguably could have beat Cotto if he were to throw more punches, you know. And I don't think he's going to be in there just for a couple of rounds to give Manny, like, the sparring session or, you know, give the fans a couple of, like, a few rounds at to, you know, kind of just to promote a good fight for the Mayweather. I think he's going to go in there, you know, looking to win the fight. And he's a tough guy, man. I cannot say that enough, that Claudio's just a tough, tough, tough guy. You know, I know his training method is just ridiculous. You know, the guy is strong. You know, I mean, honestly, like, I can't pick against Pacquiao at this moment, man. The guy's, like, on fire. You know, just his work rate in general is just what I feel is going to work win this fight.
Is it you can't pick against him, or is it really, honestly, man, I'm a little afraid to pick against him now?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest, man. I actually picked Cotto to beat Pacquiao. You know, I thought Cotto's size and his punching power was going to wear down Manny, and it didn't happen, you know. And I was eating crow after that fight. But, you know, like, the way, like, just Manny's training and the way he just moved up in weight and just his aggression and his power and his ability to take a punch more than anything has just transferred up to these higher weights. You know, and just given the fact that Claudio is just, you know, he, like I said, he goes in a defensive shell and just doesn't throw enough punches, man. I just think Manny outworks him, you know, unanimous decision.
You know, my question is this, you know, because a lot of times when it's on paper, you look at it, even with Manny Pacquiao, okay, because, you know, the body, the superstition that Gabriel Montoya was talking about, that Manny lets you work him in the body because he's been stopped, you know, by body shots. And you think about that, and then you think about, like, Ricky Hatton, who goes to the body, Miguel Cotto, who has a history of stopping fighters to the body. And then when they step in the ring with Manny Pacquiao, for some reason, they don't throw him. And a lot of people go, man, why? What happened here? I think what happens is that he is so fast, and his game of his with his feet and with his hands, that he literally discourages you to open up, to drop down low, to land those liver shots, so that eventually that game plan is now has turned into, I got to just keep my hands up and try to catch whatever's coming at me so that I don't get stopped.
You know, I agree 100%, brother. Like, you know, the toughest thing is to hit something that's not there, you know? And Manny comes at you in so many different angles, and he comes in and steps right back out. And by the time you realize that punch is there to be thrown, you don't throw it because you're afraid of what's going to come back. You know, you're afraid. You start to go into your head of, you, what if I miss? You know, what if I miss that shot? Then you're looking at being countered by a punch that you don't even see coming from an angle you had no idea was there. You know, and I think that's something that happened with Cotto. Like you said, like, the punch was there, but then you're afraid it will come back, so you're reluctant to throw it, you know, and you start to try to protect those headshots that are coming back at you. I mean, it's just, like I said before, I mean, like, you, like, when you can't hit something that's not there, you know, like, you're afraid of what's going to come back because you don't see it.
Absolutely, you know, and that's one thing that a lot of people are kind of now starting to see, and really it keeps you now hesitant, because just like I think it was either Strike or somebody had mentioned that, you know, at one point everybody was picking against Manny, but now that he has legitimate a test in front of him, not even a test, just a contender, because you can no longer say that this is a test in the welterweight division for Manny Pacquiao. He is now a welterweight, you know, stepping
right
in the ring. So when you have somebody like him, you know, being so quick and fluent with his punches, that now, you know, you're kind of like, okay, should I pick against him now? Because he's getting the prime time. Joshua Claudio stepping in there, and is Joshua having a history of slowing down, being a guy that's very conservative and keeping his punches together? Do you feel that he can up his game, you know, a rise to the occasion, maybe, in order to secure himself a victory? And really, I think that's not, no one's on the fence of that. I don't think anybody's decided to climb up the fence on that particular analysis at this moment, because you know, either you're left broke after a Manny Pacquiao, you know, fight, or you're left like, wow, what happened here?
Exactly. You know, and I think Gabriel, from what I was hearing earlier before, said it right, where he said that, you know, Joshua Quad is going to have to go in this fight going for broke. You know, I mean, he's going to have to step out of his comfort zone and use a different formula than what he's used to. You know, because if he sits there and tries to fight this fight like the Cotto fight, you know, or some of these other fights that he's fought, I mean, he's gonna get tagged, and what that does is it gives room for one of those controversial decisions that Gabriel was talking about earlier about not I think it was Gabriel, I think it was your co-host that said that, you know, the fear is that, you know, he's gonna sit there and fall into a corner and take 20 odd blows, you know, like unanswered, and then they're gonna stop the fight, you know, when Josh was not hurt, but it's just the fact that he hasn't thrown anything back, you know. So this fight, what is,
You know what's funny is that we had Freddie Roach on Sunday, and he did say, I don't think we're going to stop him, but I think we could, I mean, not knock him out, but I think we could stop the bout on the ninth round. And I think what Strikehart was saying, I think what you're saying, and Gabriel, I think you guys are probably seeing exactly what Freddie's seeing, which is, you know, we can corner him. If he does what he did exactly against Miguel Cotto, and we get him in that corner, Manny is known to throw, you know, a 10-15 punch combination where it leaves you to believe, okay, and a lot of the shots, really, honestly, they don't land. You know, there's maybe out of that 10-shot combination, two of them do end up landing on there. So it could lead to the ref going, you know what, I'm not going to, especially with a lot of money riding on it, it could go down to, you know, we're going to stop this. Cesar, hold on for a second, because I believe we have our other guest on the show. Area code 111, state your name, brother.
How you doing? It's Sean Brown here from the UK.
Sean Brown, how you doing, Sean Brown? From Boxing News Magazine. How you doing, brother?
I'm not bad. How are you?
Good. So, you know, I got Cesar from Diamond Boxing along with us, and he's obviously giving us his take and his breakdown. Before I let Cesar off the air, I want to hear your take about who wins this fight and why.
Right, okay. Well, even though the fight has been called the event, I think the fight should be called Speed Kills. I know that that Joshua Clotty ain't going to be a walkover for Pacquiao, but frankly, he's just not on Pacquiao's level. Now, what Clotty will try and do in the early part of the fight, or what he has to do, is he has to stay with Pacquiao, because if Manny gets a lead early on, then it could be a very long night for Joshua. What he's got to do is get in close and get him backed up, but Manny won't let that happen. If you see the way that he's fought against Cotto, De La Hoya, and even Hatton for the 5 minutes that it lasted, he does not stand in the same place at once. He's always flying about like a bee, and he's always throwing punches from here, there, and everywhere, awkward angles. And whilst I don't think Pacquiao will have the power from the shots he throws to knock Clotty out, I wouldn't be surprised if at one point he gets Clotty backed up and he throws a lot of unanswered punches and the ref steps in and says, no, that's it, maybe inside 10 rounds. So, again, I just think with Manny, speed is the key, and until he fights somebody like Floyd, I think that will always be the case, and he'll keep on winning these fights.
Sean, let me ask you this before I let you go. We have a lot of calls coming in right now.
Yeah.
But I want to find out a little bit about the Prize Fighters tournament, okay, happening
okay.
in the UK.
Yeah.
Why should the Americans be interested into this tournament?
All right, okay. Well, obviously at the moment, the UFC mixed martial arts is gaining a lot of attention and exposure all over the world. And that's seen as a kind of quick fix entertainment. Two guys go in a cage and knock the crap out of each other. Now, Prize Fighter isn't like that, but it's similar in format in that it's a quick fix. It's basically eight guys that face off against each other at the same weight, and it goes from the quarterfinals to the semifinals to the final. And should a man get cut or badly hurt, then there's two guys standing by to take place should that happen. And what you tend to find is, especially at the higher weights, like cruiserweight, heavyweight, is that due to the fact it's over three-minute rounds, you tend to find that the two guys will go at it, you know, right from the opening bell. So you're getting instant action straight away, whereas you're getting some fights these days, obviously, over 12 rounds, where you're waiting for something to happen. But in Prize Fighter, just due to the shortened format, you know that someone is going to have to go for it and take a chance, especially if they lose the first two rounds. If they lose the first two rounds, they know that in the third round, they're going to have to go for the big KO. So it provides entertainment. It's been going over here since April 2008, and it's been a massive success. Every show is sold out. It's getting great TV coverage over here, and it's something that appeals to a younger audience who may be getting swayed to the UFC, and perhaps if you get them watching something like Prize Fighter, it might lead them into watching guys like Manny Pacquiao, you know?
Absolutely, brother. You know, we got Sean Brown from Boxing News Magazine on with us and talking about the Prize Fighters tournament. Another thing too is Sean Brown was able to interview Juan Diaz, who Juan Diaz had mentioned maybe stepping in the ring with Edwin Valero, you know, possibly soon or later. If you want to check out any of his work, go to boxingnews.com. You can check out some of Sean Brown. Sean Brown is going to be our UK correspondent. He'll be giving us the boxing news rundown from the UK. Sean, thank you very much, brother, for calling in. I can't wait to hear the news, the breaking news that you have, and the interviews that you're going to be able to provide on Leave It in the Ring.
No problem, David. I'll just say two things. Thanks for having me on the show. And just to correct that web address, it's boxingnewsonline.net.
Online.net. There you go. Well, Sean, I will talk to you soon, brother.
Okay, David. Take care. Bye-bye.
Caesar, don't hang up because I got some more questions for you, but I got to let in another one of our guests, I believe, from area code 408. What's your name, brother, and what's on your mind?
What's going on, Dave? It's Elias, man.
Elias, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Good, man. I just wanted to call in and chime in real quick, man.
Yeah.
On the show.
Well, life
I was worried, man, as far as the Claudia Pacquiao fight, bro.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering if anybody else was worried about Claudia's camp, man. With all the drama of his trainer not being able to come over on time and basically him having to open up camp sort of by himself without the guy he's been training with.
You know what? I think that's a big thing there, too. I mean, going around Joshua already, and this was the thing. I mean, this is a question for everybody here, is Joshua honestly has kind of labeled himself as the guy already. I mean, it's like he already is aware that I can't win on American soil on decisions. So is he walking in already with that in mind frame of, like, I'm not going to win this fight? And then you go down where he's not going to have his regular trainer because he couldn't get his visa. He has to now go with a new trainer and a new campsite. How much of that puts in play in the mind frame of him? I'm going to go real quick with Strikeheart. What do you think, Strike?
Well, it certainly can't be good for Claudy. But he seems to always be able to keep it real with himself. Whenever you hear him talk or you talk to him, you notice how calm he is, and he is very aware of things. He says, you know, it's better to be the people's champion than the champion of the boxing commission. So he knows that a lot of people feel like he beat Cotto, maybe not everybody, but he understands that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that take his side in some of the things that have happened to him in the past. He's a guy who he lost the fight to Margarito, yes, but he had injuries. He was disqualified against Baldemir for some headbutts in a fight he was winning. And then he has his decision loss to Cotto, which was a split decision loss, and many people, including myself, felt like he won that fight. So I think he's not a broken fighter mentally. He certainly has a lot of confidence in himself.
Well, in saying that, from what I'm hearing from you, is he's
uh-huh.
kind of looking in, is he kind of going into this fight looking like basically I can't win unless all I can do is put on my best performance. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not expecting to be given anything. From what you're saying.
Absolutely, and he's gone as far as to say if he feels like he won the fight and they don't give him the decision, the judges, that he will leave top rank and look for a new promoter. So he not only is he aware of the fact that that is a strong possibility, but he doesn't seem to
so
be
then
too
how
happy
do you secure-
about that either.
Let me ask you guys this. How do you secure a bet then on somebody that already is walking in thinking like, well, they're not going to give me this. You know, I have to obviously pull something out of the bag that I've never done before. I've never had to really honestly, you know, kind of come from behind and knock somebody out. Antonio Margarito, he couldn't get that done because of so-called injury. Zab Judah obviously quit after amount of time. You know, he was getting break down, so they stopped it on him.
It was a cut.
You know, I mean, you have to kind of say that Zab was getting the better of him, and even with Miguel Cotto. So my question –
I don't know, man.
I think he was breaking Zab down myself.
It's off topic a little bit, but I thought he was beating Zab pretty easy.
I agree. I mean, yeah, like the cut caused the fight to stop. But, I mean, I don't know how much longer it would have lasted. You know, like, I mean, I do feel like he was breaking down Zab Judah. And,
yeah,
I mean – Like I said, I mean, Zab just wasn't doing anything to keep Claudio off of him. You know, I mean, I know that we're going off topic, but I mean, I agree with everyone else that it was, I mean, yeah, there was a reason why they stopped the fight, but I mean, I think it was inevitable.
Either way, I mean, you got to still sit back and think, okay, he's never done this in his career, though. He's never came from behind. So already saying that means he's got to readjust his mental plan and want to step in with Manny that already if he's believing, look, they're not going to give it to me if it goes to the decision, you know, or all the odds are against me. So he has to really go in the mind frame of being a puncher, which really, honestly, that's never been his game plan. He's never been a puncher. He's more of a technician.
I agree with you on that one, Dave. I think he does have to open up a little more than he normally does. And then as far as his mindset of being, you know, defensive first and then, you know, countering, I think he has to change that a little bit to really excel in this fight, in my opinion. I got to go with you on that one.
And really, honestly, only the greats have been able to do something like that. And if you look back, when the first fight that comes into mind is Sugar Ray Leonard stepping in with Tommy the Hitman Hearns. You know, we all believed that, you know, Sugar was going to be on his toes and he was going to outbox him. But it seemed like the boxer was being outboxed by the slugger. So he's turned his whole game around and really set the pace to being the puncher. Joshua is in that kind of right now scenario where he's been a good technician. But he's honestly going in with a boxer-puncher now. You can now put Manny Pacquiao in that same breath of being a boxer-puncher.
Right.
Well, my question is, too, my whole thing, and I wrote an article, you know, on There Will Be Blood about this, is I wonder why they went with Claudio, him being so dangerous of a fighter, you know what I mean? And in the past, he's blown up all the way up to close to 170 on fight night. And my thing, like I originally brought up with the whole camp, I wonder, I hate to, you know, not accuse anybody of anything, but I wonder if they being top ranked, knew that the situation was that he was going to have a hard time bringing his trainer up and that there wasn't that much time as far as when he got the fight to start the camp. Because originally, you have to favor Pacquiao. I mean, I did. But I thought he had a good chance of just not making the fight rough, maybe even pulling off an upset until all this stuff I started hearing about his trainer not coming and then him having, you know what I mean, basically, I guess, go on hand, you know, with whoever's in the gym.
Absolutely, you know, guys, stay on the line. Let's chime in real quick. Oliver Suarez from SportsHypes.com. Brother, are you on the line with us, Oliver?
Yeah, I am, man. I was just listening to you guys.
How you doing, man?
Good, man. Good, man.
So maybe you can answer us the question here, the one that's posed from Elias from There Will Be Blood. He's saying, you know, how much, really honestly, did they want to fight Joshua Kaladi? Or, you know, was this forced down their throat? And why would they want to take such a dangerous fight?
I think that was the only fight available. I mean, if they took Malinagi, I mean, no one really cared about that fight. I mean, that's going to be an easy fight for Pacquiao. besides Malinaji, there's really no one else. Mostly was fighting Berto. So basically, like Floyd Mayweather, mostly was he was forced to fight Mosley. Pacquiao was forced to fight Claudio.
So I mean, plus
he was the best opponent available at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And him being a top 10 welterweight, you know, I mean, it has something to do with it. You know, they want to fight. They want to prove that the Mayweather fight is not going to make or break Manny Pacquiao. You know. They want to show that like Manny Pacquiao will take the better fights, you know, and it being that, you know, Joshua Claudio was there, you know, I mean, maybe he poses a huge threat. Maybe he doesn't pose a huge threat because of his fighting style and because of the visa issues with his trainer. But I mean, like in the eyes of fans, like, I mean, this is a big fight with a person who's a top 10 welterweight, you know? So it's not like we're taking a step down. It's like we're staying in that same area.
Exactly. And I think it's because Pacquiao is thinking about retirement, so he doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to waste his time in his last few fights. He want to fight the big names, you know, like Mayweather mostly. So you know, there's no reason for him to fight anybody else.
And I really honestly believe that. You know what? I gotta say this: that I believe that when the fight between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fell apart, okay, that by him. However you want to look at it, whether there was nobody else left out there for him or, you know what, they were trying to keep it in-house, by him accepting the fight with Joshua Kaladi was really honestly a slap to Floyd Mayweather because it was like, look at what I'm doing. I'm taking on the best. And that really honestly made Floyd put away his track shoes for a moment and go, well, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to fight – The really honestly where a lot of people have been afraid to step into, the old man who looks more like the bionic man against Antonio Margarito, Sugar Shane Mosley.
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
There was a brief time there, too, where he was really in trouble because, you know, up until the Berto-Mosley fight got canceled, he really didn't have anybody. So that was good fortune on his part. Obviously not for Haiti, you know, but... But for Floyd Mayweather, it definitely gave him an opponent. I still feel like he had a little bit of cold feet. But Richard Schaefer said, "Hey man, here's the contract. You better sign it before we start saying something." So, yeah, it's a good situation all around, and it does set up, you know, another big fight at the end of this year, maybe even two or three, just based off of these fights right here. It might turn out to be a better situation than a Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight on March 13th. We might get something better at the end of this year. So, you know,
yep.
Absolutely,
I definitely agree.
No, we got Oliver Torres from SportsHype.com. We also got Elias Salmadova from the Will Be Love Fight Show.com. And then we got my man Cesar Sarangona from Diamond Boxing. Really quick for Oliver, because then we got to go on a break, and then we got Doug Fisher coming through among other guys. But really quick, Oliver, what's your pick? What's your breakdown? And who wins this fight?
I think it's gonna be the first time that Claudio gets knocked out. I mean, I do give him a chance, but we've seen him fade in the last few rounds. And I think it's too late for him to change. He says he's in the best shape of his life, but when you're fighting Manny, you gotta go all. You gotta be ready to fight all 15 rounds. He's gonna be coming after him. And I think what people overlooked about Manny is his movements. He's never fought anyone like him. Probably the closest one was Zab Judah, but he doesn't have the quickness of and the foot movements of Manny. And those punches coming from all angles, those are the most dangerous punches. And Pacquiao just needs to land one of those punches, and it's over.
Could
eighth round knockout or ninth round.
Eighth or ninth round. Let me ask you this really quick, Oliver. Could Joshua Kaladi be the Frankie Randall to Chavez?
I think so. But I think he needs to survive the first few rounds. I think he needs to be more aggressive. He can't be complacent and become too defensive like he always does. You know, he needs to throw more punches and to keep Manny up at bay. You know, he needs to change things up. So that's what he needs to do. But I don't know if he can do that, though.
That is going to be the big question. I think that question is going to definitely be answered on March 13th. Oliver, man, I appreciate you calling in, brother. You know, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Can't wait to have you on again.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. There's Oliver Suarez from SportsHype.com. Elias, don't hang up. Caesar, don't hang up. I got some more questions for you guys. You know, obviously, love chopping it up, boxing. And we got other guests calling in. I like to keep my main guys on the line. But we're going to take a real, real quick break, brothers. And we'll be right back. And then we should have Doug Fisher on. And he can give us his take and his breakdown of what he thinks is going to happen on March 13th.
Yo, brown is my complexion. I'm burning, suckers to wear protection. Now who's next when Ed's flexing? I'm the bread and you are just a crumb off. Step back, relax, cause that OG's about to come off. I'm from Rockberry, the berry, but not the fruit, y'all. Don't make me act like where I come from, cause it's brutal. Hold my own in a zone that's neutral. Soon to be large, the whole nine yards, but I ain't suit, y'all. Suckers be swearing that just staring is gonna scare me. Look but don't touch, and if you do, be prepared, G, to go out. Just like your first day off punishment, the Bulldogs, Rockberry, and Boston is what I represent. The Black United Leaders living directly on Groovin' Sounds. At first you didn't know us, but now it's like you'll put me down. We didn't get in there so you can get in with us. You wasn't down, we was riding the bus. So put on your and step off. I got to have
should have Dougie Fisher shortly. He should be calling in right now. I just spoke to him. So let's go back really, really, really quick with my boy Caesar. And, you know, I know he's this guy watches as much boxing as the rest of us do. But, you know, Caesar, I don't know if you had a chance to watch that Friday night fight that happened on ESPN, brother.
You know what? Actually, I just got back into town, brother. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I read a little bit.
There goes the strike for you right there. That's a knockdown now, man. You know, a vet, get two more of those. Now you're not considered a hardcore fight fan. You're considered a casual fan, brother.
I know, brother, but even some of us best ones need to take a little bit of a break every now and then so we don't burn ourselves out, you feel?
Hey, I know what you mean. You know, I didn't watch – you know what's funny? I didn't watch it live, But I did get bagged, like, from my boy Chris. It's our co-host on the show. My producer, Art, and my, one of my PRs, Red. They got all over me about it, you know. So I immediately went back and streamed it on. It was on ESPN.com and got on there and watched it. And I got to say, it was an excellent fight. It was back and forth war, you know. But let me patch in our next guest, who's one of the, I would have to say, one of the most respected people out there in the boxing world when they come in terms of correspondent and writer, Doug Fisher from RingTV.com. Doug, are you on the line with us, brother?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect, man.
All right. Yeah, I'm on.
So how's the weather over there? Because I heard it never rains in Southern California.
It did yesterday, all day yesterday, kind of on and off all day. And when that happens, it doesn't pay to be out on the roads, but as soon as the rain stops, it's really beautiful. You know, it just cleans all the crap out of the air. So it's a beautiful it's been a beautiful Sunday morning so far.
You know what? And it's beautiful over here right now. You know, Doug. First off, I followed you from Max Boxing, and then from Max Boxing you went to RingTV.com, and then from there you start doing commentating on, you know, TV. And I gotta say, man, that following you from the beginning, it's like when you made those accomplishments, it was like the rest of us hardcore fight fans that didn't have a voice have now had a voice when you finally made it big for the rest of us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. I don't know how big I've made it or whatever, but you know, if hardcore fans feel like I'm saying what they would say, you know, if they were just, you know, watching a fight, or if their voice was heard while I'm commentating, then I feel like I'm doing my job. I like to think that I'm bringing that that diehard fight fans perspective to a broadcast. At the same time, realizing that you can't get too hardcore, you know what I mean? You know, we're not there to pain.
You can't start cussing, in other words.
For watching. Yeah, you do kind of hold your tongue a little bit, but no. But I do. I mean, that's kind of how I see my role. I'm supposed to be whatever, the color commentator, the boxing analyst. You know, I'm not a fighter. I've never been in the ring and done what those guys do. So I always try to have a certain level of respect for all the fighters who step in there and sweat and bleed for us. But what I want to do is for someone who's a casual fan, kind of give them whatever that insight that a hardcore fan has, you know, the perspective of somebody who has been following the sport for many, many, many years and can't get enough of it.
Well, I got to say, you know, you're absolutely one of the voices that we love to follow and respect as a hardcore fight fan. I know that a lot of times when I'm watching it, I'm like, man, I was just thinking that right now, Dougie. Thank you for saying that. But I know there are some fans, though, that don't like to hear you, and that would be the Floyd Mayweather fans. Am I right about that?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know how many really, really hardcore Floyd Mayweather fans are out there. He does have, I think there's a small segment of fans who are way into Mayweather, and it's just like he's the man, and anyone who says he isn't is a hater or a racist or is just plain wrong. Most people, I think most fans, hardcore fans, they appreciate Mayweather, but they have the same frustration with Mayweather that I have, and that is for many years. He's been milking his HBO contract. He's been milking his promotional situations. And he's been fighting guys he knows he's going to beat.
Right.
I don't think I've ever picked against Mayweather in a fight. Well, until this one that's coming up. And part of the reason is because he is wonderfully talented. And I had no problem with Mayweather at 130 and 135 pounds. He started making me scratch my head a little bit at junior welterweight. And since stepping up to 140, really a pit stop, and then going on to welterweight, I've had problems with him, and I've had problems with his fans. But you know what? Year after year, let's say from the start of 2005 to the present, it's like I get less and less of a backlash from fans and more people agreeing with me. So I kind of see it. I was ahead of the curve way back at the start of 2005 when I dropped him from, like, my personal pound-for-pound list. I dropped him from number 2 to like number 5 because he was fighting Henry Brusellis. You know what I'm saying? He was He was, you know, he wasn't fighting Kosciuszko. He was fighting Arturo Gatti and then acting like he did something. Even though before the fight, he said, this guy's nothing. This guy's been beaten six times. I'm going to show you a seventh way to beat him. He's a paper title holder. And then he beats him, and he's like, oh, you got to christen me the man. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. So, you know, and when you step up to 147 pounds, and, you know, it's Sean Bay Mitchell, and there were other, you know, there were tougher fights you could have taken. Now, you know, I'm just going to – it's not like – I'm not trying to put him down, but I'm only going to give him credit for what he actually does and who he beats in the ring. It can only give him so much credit, you know.
I feel your pain, Dougie. Trust me. I feel your pain, brother. Well, you know, I don't want to keep you on too long because I know it's a Sunday and everybody wants to enjoy their Sunday, especially it being a beautiful day and it was raining yesterday. So I got two things I want to talk to you about. First,
sure.
Really quick, you're a ringside with Victor Ortiz. I was talking to Gabriel Montoya about this, and I had some concerns about him. Seeing him in that match going 10 rounds, and really honestly – Alatorre, I thought he could, at any given moment, if he would have brought out the vicious of what we've seen in the past, could have took him out a little sooner than what we were seeing. The thing I was concerned about was his feet. It looked like to me, I don't know whether if he's being weight drained to make 140 now, but he never seemed to be under his feet. He seemed to be jumping around a little bit too much in that ring, and he seemed to not really have a solid game plan. I mean, it looked like they had a game plan, but it didn't seem like he was sold on that game plan or had any belief in that game plan.
You know, I saw it sort of as a bona fide sparring session. It was an opportunity for him to stay sharp, just to stay busy, kind of like a little pit stop between the Antonio Diaz fight and the fight that's scheduled May 15th with Nate Campbell. Who's a dangerous fighter. I think, you know, despite what Timothy Bradley did with Nate in the three rounds of action that they had, I think Nate Campbell, although he really isn't proven at 140 pounds, just given who he is and given his experience and given the skill and technique and the heart that he has, I think he's a dangerous fighter for most junior welterweights out there. And that certainly includes somebody who's still sort of picking up the pieces from a devastating knockout loss like Victor Ortiz. So, you know, I really saw his Fight Night Club appearance as just a little treat for Los Angeles area and Oxnard area fans, an opportunity to get some national exposure on Fox Sports Net, a little bit of international exposure on the Internet. But really, the fight itself, Victor knew, Victor's management knew that, and obviously his promoter, Golden Boy Promotions, knew that Hector Alatorre was absolutely no threat. They did not want to put him in there with somebody who could punch hard. They didn't want to put him in there with somebody who was physically strong, you know, somebody or somebody who was really, really rough, like somebody who, you know, maybe could. You saw their heads clashed a bunch of times, but
right.
They didn't want him to be in there with somebody who's, if they did, you know, like a Josh Clotty guy, somebody with a bowling ball head where, you know, they clash heads and Victor comes away with abrasions or cuts or anything. They don't want to jeopardize an HBO date in May or jeopardize his training for that date or push anything back. So what Alatorre was an opportunity for him to get some rounds. One thing that Ortiz needs in order to develop is quality rounds, and not the kind of rounds that he got with Marcos Maidana, because he was fighting for his life from the very first round in that fight. As soon as he got dropped, as hard as he got dropped, he was just fighting. He wasn't in there growing as a young fighter. He was fighting life and death, and he wound up basically dying that night.
Right.
He got overwhelmed. There's no way to look at it, you know.
Well,
he may have felt that he fought the wrong fight, or and he did fight the wrong fight. I mean, he was supposed to box more in that fight, or he felt that he got overwhelmed or got caught up in the moment, but I just think he got caught up by Marcos Maidana, who's a certified badass. So they're being careful with bringing him back up to that point. Alatorre, I agree with you. I think he could have stopped Alatorre probably anytime after the third or fourth round, but I think he wanted to go rounds. He's fought into the 10th round once. That was against Emmanuel Clotty in August or September of 2007. And from that point, you know, he really hasn't fought past five rounds or past five or six rounds, and he hasn't been in with, you know, when he has fought beyond, you know, two or three rounds, either the level of opponent or just the quality of that fight wasn't such that he was really getting much out of it. So I think, you know, he was thinking in there, but I think if you look at his footwork in there, I think he was literally working on, you know, alternating, like cutting off the ring when Alator decided to retreat, and then he would allow Alator, who had no business stalking a guy as big and strong as Victor is, when he allowed Alator to come forward, he was working on spinning out of the way. You know, he's basically working on lateral movement. It was a bona fide workout, and he wanted to go into the 10th round, and then he decided, okay, now I'm going to close the show, and that's what he did. I don't see it as a minus. I see it as a small plus. He got some rounds under his belt, and we're really going to see what he's gotten or how far he's developed since the Maidana loss when he steps in the ring with Nate Campbell on May 15.
Well, let me ask you this. And area code 602, I see you on the line, brother. If you can just hold a little longer, bear with us. But going back, Doug, with Golden Boy, obviously Golden Boy, you're right. They put in a guy there that was not going to be a major threat for Victor, but I don't think – and I'm pretty sure Golden Boy knew that they're not fooling anybody with that one there, putting those two guys together. But saying that already,
he knew who was going to win. Yeah, there was
right.
No doubt. There was absolutely
there was no doubt about
doubt
that.
That Hector Alator.
What happened with Maidana, okay, going back to that fight, what happened there, Victor had a lot of fans that turned his back on him. On the performance that happened on Thursday night at the Nokia Club, does that woo his way back into the hearts of the fans that turned on him and said this kid has no heart anymore?
No, because he didn't have to show heart against Hector Alator. All he had to do was show up in shape. He's the bigger man, as you noted, and you mentioned some concerns about can he make 140 pounds. I don't think he can make 140 pounds much longer. And we have to remember, Victor's a young guy. He just turned 23 this year. I think January 31st, he turned 23. So he's still young enough to where he can be a natural welterweight and still boil his body down to that, to the junior welterweight division. But I don't think he's going to be able to do so long, because you look at his chest, his shoulders, his upper body, really, it's that of a welterweight. He does not have the body or even the bone structure of a junior welterweight. Because he's young, I think he can make the weight this year and maybe in 2011. But I think beyond 2011, I think Victor Ortiz is going to be 47
pounds. Absolutely, brother. Well, let's go down real quick in your breakdown and your take of Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati. Doug, are you there? I think we lost him. Okay, well, let's go with the area code 602. Brother, what's on your mind? Area code 602. State your name, brother, and what's on your mind. Who's your pick? No? 602? No.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
Can you hear me? Hey, how you doing, man? My name's Jose Benavides, man. I'm training at the Wild Card Gym.
How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Thank you so much, you know, for letting me be with you guys. Well, man, you know, Manny right now, he's looking good, really strong, man. I think it's going to be a good fight, man.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, being at the Wild Card and seeing him train, I've seen Manny train, and the guy's a machine. I mean, if there's anybody that's dedicated to being the best fighter in the world, Manny Pacquiao obviously is that mirror of a person. If you want to look into how a fighter's supposed to look, right?
Yes, man. Exactly like what you said, man. This guy's a machine, man. He trains really hard, and every time, you know, he's ready to fight, man. And right now, he's looking really good, really sharp.
Let me ask you this. What are some of the things that have you seen him work on get in with a big Joshua Calati? Because obviously Josh is not going to be coming in at 147. He's going to be coming in pretty close to a super middleweight.
Exactly. You know what? Well, pretty much, you know, he's going to be working a lot of angles, man. He's going to try to go through that really good defense he has, man. I think that's pretty much what they're working on right now.
Lorenzo, thank you, man, for calling in and chopping it up with us, you know, and leaving in the ring, brother.
Thank you, guys.
I got Dougie Fisher back on the line. Dougie, I think we lost you for a moment.
Yeah, I don't even know at what point that we got cut off. The point that I was trying to make about Ortiz is that I don't think he's going to win any fans that he lost with the Maidana fight until he's put in the situation in a ring, you know, against a real formidable opponent to where he has to prove that he has heart. He has to show that he has heart to win back any fan that jumped off his bandwagon because they thought he didn't show heart against Maidana or just plain doesn't have heart, period. You know, he's got to prove that. He obviously didn't have to do that against Hector Alator, and we'll find out if he has to do that against Nate Campbell. But it's going to take time to win back fans. I think when you're young and you're on an unbeaten streak and you're just beating guys and you're looking great, it's easy for the bandwagon to fill up. But as soon as the bandwagon gets tipped over, at whatever point during a young fighter's career, it's a lot harder to get that bandwagon back on its wheels and rolling again, and then getting fans to jump back on it. That's just the way it is.
Well, let me ask you this, because Golden Boy have never been shy in putting their fighters and matching them up tough. Now, putting them in with Nate Campbell, I honestly, this is the way I'm looking at it. They're both of these fighters are in that category of being questioned of heart.
Right.
Nate Campbell has been in that position. Both of these guys right now are in a make 'em and break 'em type of situation, being under the Golden Boy banner. We just saw that happen with Eloy Perez facing David Wadella. It was two guys that were coming up in the prospects.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like them throwing out a bone out there and seeing who's going to fight and win it.
Right. Yeah, you know, both guys, their backs are against the wall. You know, they feel that those kind of matchups and those sorts of situations are, number one, going to bring out a really good fight for the fans, which is usually the case. But it also lets them know, okay, well, who do we, you know, we've signed both guys, and I'm talking about Ortiz and Campbell. Who do we sort of put our muscle behind? Who do we push?
Right.
Generally speaking, you go with the younger guy because he has more upside. You know, he has the longer shelf life, supposedly. But sometimes, you know, the old veteran still has some life left in him,
and
he has a name because of his years in the business. You know, and you know, fighting fellow names and you know, fighting on TV more often. So maybe they put their muscle behind that guy. I mean, if Nate Campbell upsets Victor Ortiz, I expect Golden Boy to get behind him and try to push to maybe put Campbell in with Amir Khan or one of the other, you know, dozen or so junior
Marquez, maybe?
Right. Maybe. You know what? Maybe. That would be interesting. You know,
it would be interesting.
Two older,
yeah,
natural lightweights fighting each other, you know, at least in that fight, it's not like one guy has an unnatural size advantage. You kind of wonder if, Nate, is Nate fighting at 140 pounds because he's just gotten to that age where his metabolism slowed to the point where he can't make 135, but he still really should be fighting at 135. Like, that's his most effective weight. Like, that's how I feel about Juan Manuel Marquez, who I do believe can still make 135 pounds. I just feel, you know, I think he's a great fighter, but over 135 pounds, I don't think he's so great. I think he's he loses something. He's just not the same guy when he fights over the lightweight division. So if Campbell were to fight Marquez at 140 pounds, it kind of evens out. You know, I think both guys really their best weight are lighter weights, but they're probably comfortable at this, you know, stage of their lives, mid to late 30s, fighting at 140 pounds, so they'll show up nice and they'll feel good, and you know, maybe they'll have a lot in the stamina department. But
right,
who knows? There's a lot of options out there, and you know, with somebody like Nate, it's not like, you know, he's asking for anybody to protect him. To be quite honest, to be fair to Victor Ortiz, I don't think Ortiz is asking to be protected, but I think that Golden Boy would probably be more likely to put a rejuvenated Nate Campbell in with somebody like Timothy Bradley before they put a Victor Ortiz in with a Tim Bradley. Even if Ortiz beats Nate Campbell, I don't think their very next fight would be a Timothy Bradley. And I'm not
right.
saying that Ortiz is afraid of Bradley or anything like that, but I just think they're like, well, oh, hang on. You know what? We've got 3 wins under Ortiz's belt. Let's stretch it out to 4 or 5. Let's give him some more HBO showcases and, you know, some more name opponents. And if we, you know, if and when we put Ortiz in with Bradley, it's going to be this huge Southern California, you know, showdown. We'll sell out Staples Center, which is probably the right way to do it.
Absolutely.
Then again, you never know. You know, maybe the very next guy Ortiz fights after Nate Campbell beats him. You know, it's always a gamble, you know.
Absolutely, man. You know, well, we got Doug Fisher with us from RingTV.com. Doug, I want your breakdown, your prediction, and who wins. And if – let's go with that one first. Go for it, brother.
Which one? Which fight?
For the Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati.
I guess that's the next major fight coming up, and I see a tough fight. I think this is going to be, and I think I'm in the minority here too. I think this is probably going to be Manny Pacquiao's most difficult fight since his rematch with Juan Manuel Marquez. And when was that? March of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Was that? Yeah. So we're going back.
Yeah, it was
away.
March. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think it's going to be his most difficult fight in 2 years. The Filipino Dynamo has been on quite a roll. He's had a lot of major fights since that rematch, which itself was a major fight. But I think with Claudio, it's a combination of Claudio's natural size. I mean, Claudio was a welterweight when he turned pro at age 17. It's a combination of his size, his style, and his durability. I think he goes the distance. I don't think he gives Pacquiao the opportunities to go off on him the way Ricky Hatton and Miguel Cotto and other fighters did. He's just I think Pacquiao relishes a shootout because when the other guy is aggressive, that's when he has opportunities to attack his opponent at unpredictable angles. And I do not think Claudio is going to attack Pacquiao in the manner that Miguel Cotto did, or just walk forward in the manner that Ricky Hatton and Oscar De La Hoya did. I think he's going to stand his ground, but his offense is sporadic, and his defense, you know, he goes up into that shell, and he basically turns into a human bowling ball,
right,
where your options are to hit him on the top of his head, which can be potentially dangerous. If you catch him wrong, you can hurt your hand. Or trying to land a clean shot to his body, but he covers up in a way where, you know, you're hitting his forearms and his biceps and his elbows, and he's so strong, he can take it. You know, kind of like Winky Wright. You know, he's very underrated for his physical strength and his toughness.
Exactly.
Because he, you know, the strongest puncher could tee off on his arms and forearms, and he could take it, and he would wear opponents out like that. And I think Claudio does that to a lesser extent. And I think like a Winky Wright, like a southpaw, a right-handed Winky Wright, I think Claudio bothers people with his jab. You know, he fires that jab from that high-held guard of his, and he's disruptive because the jab is quick. His technique is pretty sharp, at least with his left hand, nice sharp jab, nice sharp left uppercut. He goes to the body well. And I also think Claudio has underrated footwork. He's not somebody who's going to be running around the ring, but
right,
he takes just a step or half back, you know, while he's blocking a punch, and then he steps back into the opponent's range when they're sort of off guard. So he's a conundrum. He's a difficult guy in there. He's obviously beatable. He was out hustled by Antonio Margarito, and he was out boxed narrowly by Miguel Cotto. So I think, you know, I think Manny Pacquiao takes a page from both those books. I think Pacquiao outboxes and outmaneuvers him, kind of, you know, goes to either side of Clady, kind of orbits around Clady when he's just standing there covering up. But he's also he's going to be the more active fighter. You know, Pacquiao's a guy who can easily drop, you know, 80 to 90 quality round punches per round.
Right.
And, you know, if he does that, you know, if he drops, whatever, 55 to 65 quality punches around, if that's his average, he will outwork Joshua Clady and earn a unanimous decision. And that's what I see. I like Pacquiao, like, you know, 116, 112, that kind of a decision.
Let me ask you this. What, could it be unlikely that Manny gets a little too comfortable if there's not a lot of return from Joshua Clady where Manny can walk into something big by accident?
You know what? That could happen. That could happen. You know, if somebody's not putting heat on Pacquiao, Pacquiao gets bored in there. He really does. He's so relaxed in the ring, and he loves to fight so much. When the other guy stops fighting him, sort of, you know, the way Cotto did during the second half of his fight, although he had effectively disarmed Cotto.
Daddy. Hold on, Josephine. Daddy's on the phone.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I told her, too. I'm going on the radio. That daddy had this phone call, and she's like, yeah, right. I'll give you 15 minutes, and I'm just going to start talking.
You know, it's funny when, you know, you were talking a little while ago, my little one walked
in. While I'm talking, I'm going into different rooms, and she's coming in right after me, too. Like, no escape. Hold on, Josephine. Hold on. Yes, I do, but we could talk about that, and give me 5 minutes, okay? But I do think Pacquiao, sometimes his focus wanes a little bit in the ring when somebody's not taking the fight to him. When he has to be a little bit patient or whatever, and I think he can get caught. I think that happened in spots with his fights with Juan Manuel Marquez, and I think it could have happened with the Cotto fight when Cotto was using some lateral movement and sort of backpedaling away with him. Problem was Cotto had taken so much punishment in the opening four or five rounds of the bout, he really didn't have anything to put on Pacquiao when Pacquiao would drop his hands and kind of like shrug and like, come on, man, what's going on here? He couldn't sort of catch him unarmed because he was already kind of battered up. But you know what? Clady, I think, is a much Clady's not quite in Cotto's class, at least the prime version of Cotto's class. But
right.
Clady is a physically stronger and a more durable fighter. You know, he can take more punishment than Miguel Cotto. And he's certainly harder to land a clean shot on Joshua Clady than it is to land a clean shot on Miguel Cotto.
Absolutely. Well, Dougie, man, I don't want to take too much of your time. I could hear the little one in the background, you know, calling you and stuff. Hey, I appreciate you coming on here.
Quality time.
Exactly.
Hey, anytime.
All right, brother.
Anytime, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, brother, for coming on Leaving in the Ring. Well, there you go. We had a commentator, writer, and editor of RingTV.com call in and chop it up with us. I still got my boy Caesar on the line. I know that. What's up, bro?
Hey, what's going on, man? Just enjoying all the boxing talk, man. It's always nice to hear Dougie's input on stuff.
You know, we met Dougie over there in Oakland. You remember we ended up hanging out with them, and man, you talk about a down to earth cat. You know, guys.
Yeah,
really,
you know, you like. Yeah, definitely, man. You wouldn't think you'd he'd be so down to earth, but man, once you start hanging out with And I mean, I guess it kind of goes along with like a bunch of different people, man. You know, you always kind of see each other in and out of fights and press conferences. But once you get to sit down and hang out and actually talk some boxing, you get to know people and you actually become good friends, you know, at least for that night, you know.
Absolutely, man. I'm being told that the Galaxy Warrior wants to call in and talk to us a little bit. We do got a lot of other people that are scheduled to call in. We do have Kevin the Flash Kelly to call in and talk to us and give us his breakdown. And then we have Jacob the Stitch Duran that should be calling in. Let me see who is this on the line. It's on a private call. Go ahead, caller. Tell me your name and what's on your mind. What's your pick for March 13th? That was his pick.
It sounded like a pick for Kelly the Ghost Pavlik, man. But he ain't fighting that night.
They ain't fighting that night.
I would think the same thing, actually.
All right, let's go with the area code 512. What's on your mind, brother? What's your pick for March 13th?
Hey, Dave, this is Marv Dumont with Examiner. I'm going to pick Pacquiao by late stoppage.
Late stoppage. What round, brother? I mean, late stoppage, understand. It could be 9, 10, 11, 12. Which one? Be brave.
It's going to be number 10.
Number 10. Well, you know what?
Hey, David, go ahead. If you don't mind me interrupting real quick, I just want to know what kind of stoppage you're predicting.
I'm looking at a TKO, bro. I don't think it's going to be a KO. Claudia is definitely a lot bigger. But the punch volume for Pacquiao, I think, could instigate a TKO stoppage.
You know what? I mean, there's a lot of people are thinking the same thing, too. You know, I mean, God, it's just one of those kind of fights, man, that you just can't wait to see it happen, you know. But let me ask you this, Marvin. Let me ask you this. What exactly do you think, though, for that not to happen, does Joshua Kalati need to do? We've had other writers give us their breakdown and their take on what he would have to do to make sure he doesn't get stopped on a TKO or maybe possibly creating an upset for him.
You know, first of all, man, Kalati and Pacquiao, I'm glad that both of these guys are respectful to each other and that they're going to let their fists basically do the talking in the ring. And Kalati's a great guy. He's a bigger guy. You know, he's bigger than Cotto, and so I was kind of hesitant to kind of – I was really thinking about this, kind of hesitant to throw the late stoppage prediction out there. But for Cotto to be effective, I think he has to use, just like in the Art of War, the element of surprise. And, you know, there's a couple of facts here. I mean, there's opinions and speculations on this, but the couple of facts is, you know, Pacquiao is heavily favored in this fight. To if you bet $500, you win $100 if Pacquiao wins. And so he's favored. And number two, really, the style that has been effective against Pacquiao was Marquez. You know, Marquez, the counter-punching speed, throw combos and bunches when Pacquiao moved in, that's really been the only style that's been effective. Although you could argue that Eric Morales won with that jab, was effective with Pacquiao when he won the first time. So Claudio's jab has to be perfect in this fight.
Let me ask you this, though, Marvin. Honestly, now that, okay, Eric Morales and Juan Manuel Marquez, you know, I've heard that. But can we you really use that anymore as an assessment? Because I don't know whether Manny was really honestly in his peak at those moments. You there?
I'm sorry, Dave. What was your point on Manny? That I think you were suggesting that assessment is no longer valid.
I'm thinking that now. I mean, can we use that as a valid assessment right now? Because being that it was in the lighter weights, and really honestly, I don't think Manny was in his prime yet. Now that we've seen him in his prime, and we've seen him a lot faster, seen him a lot more fluent, can we use that as a way of beating him? Do you think we can still do that?
That's an excellent point, bro. I would say that I still believe – I mean, Manny is such a superior fighter now. He moves a lot. He bobs and weaves, and he's got that lateral movement also. But I still think that, you know, for Claudia and for any fighter out there, Mosley and Mayweather, that they would have to use just an effective jab on Manny. I think that sometimes Manny can be vulnerable to just a perfect jab and timed jab. And number two, I think Claudia, when we saw him with Cotto, I think he was a little forward moving and sometimes backward moving, but I didn't see a lot of lateral movement there. And kind of like Mike Tyson, where, you know, people were saying, well, the way to beat Mike Tyson is to kind of move around and not and go at him at angles, because if you're backing up, Mike Tyson will just bulldoze over you. And I think there's parallels with Pacquiao. I think, number one, Claudia, maybe if he has lateral movement, and number two, I think his jab needs to be absolutely perfect, and because I don't think he can try to counter Manny, but I'm not sure if the speed is there.
Marv, let me ask you this really quick, and my thing with this is obviously this man's going to be walking in a much bigger man than Manny, okay? And I hear that, you know, I hear what you're saying. Manny's got the movement, he's got the angles, and he's doing this and he's doing that. My opinion, though, Joshua would have to hope and bet that Manny kind of stops his pace like he did with Miguel Cotto and do the rope-a-dope, because that would be his open chance of doing something, maybe damaging Manny Pacquiao.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, Dave. I think with Cotto, Manny, I'm seeing certain aspects of Manny where he's going bold and overconfident. I mean, maybe that's not the – maybe there's another word that's a more preferred way to say it, but – with Cotto, definitely, I think he kind of steered away from Roach's game plan. He was instigating just a fight. You know, he's asking Cotto to hit him. And I think with Claudio, definitely, he is a bigger fighter. I think he's bigger than Cotto. And if there is an aspect of Manny where he kind of veers away from the game plan and he kind of, you know, to be a crowd pleaser, kind of wants to instigate a fighter, or even, like you said, if he takes a break, I think Claudio does have a chance of landing things that can maybe have an effect on Manny, because Manny is, you know, 5'6" smaller guy. So I think that's a great point.
Marvin, man, I appreciate you calling in on Leaving the Ring, brother, and giving us your assessment and your prediction. Can't wait to have you on for our next roundtable, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, there you go. You know, I know right now that there's reported 30,000 tickets that were already sold. I don't know how accurate that number is, but that's what's been said. And going back with Manny Pacquiao, and Chris, I don't know what your thoughts about this, but it always weighs on him of giving a good performance, giving, you know, the crowd a pleasing fight, you know, nothing boring. You know, every time he steps into that ring, he's never been a letdown. And already that being said, it kind of has to take you back where I wonder if he's going to plan to maybe let – if he's, let's say, able to, you know, just dazzle up Kaladi, you know, dart in and out, and it looks like it's 4, 5, 6, even 7 rounds of being one-sided, is there some way and some chance Manny goes, you know what, I'm gonna make it a little bit more competitive. I'm going to do exactly what I did to Miguel Cotto.
There's always a possibility, but I don't worry about that. If you really listen to Freddie Roach in the corner in between fights like Cotto and De La Hoya fights, he kind of keeps the reins on Manny. He tells him to keep off the ropes, you know, and then when he sees that these guys don't got nothing left, that's when he tells Manny, go in and finish these guys off. He did it with De La Hoya. He did it with Cotto. He didn't really need to do it with Hatton because that fight didn't last long enough, but he lets them know when these guys, he sees that, you know, they don't really have much left to offer and going for the kill, so I think Freddie Roach and Manny listens to him and Boo Boy well enough in the corner that he can keep him under control. I don't think the crowd's going to get to him. I think Manny's a controlled and mature enough fighter at this point in his career. Maybe if he was younger, but I think at this stage he has enough trust in Freddie Roach to listen to him and stick with the game plan.
Caesar, what do you think, brother?
You know, I agree 100% with Chris. You know, I think in kind of like in assessing the fight with Eric Morales, like you guys were saying earlier, with Marvin, you know, like you can't take that fight into consideration anymore because more than anything, I think Manny Pacquiao has stepped away from his old style, but to the point of not being so reckless where we just square up and fire punches left and right, like coming in, you know, like I said, recklessly, and where now he's a lot more patient, you know, he's got a lot bit more body movement, you know, and as far as going into like the fact that he's like is the crowd going to affect the fight? I just think it's Manny Pacquiao in general. You know, I mean, I agree that Freddie Roach keeps good reins on him, and, you know, he tells him what he needs to do. He listens, you know, and, like, and the thing is, like, the camaraderie that Freddie Roach and Manny Pacquiao have, like, that bond, you know, like, I think there's a big trust factor going on there where they know, like, Freddie Roach knows Manny Pacquiao likes to fight, you know, and he's going to fight, but he's worked with him so well, and he trusts him to, even though he's going to go in there and he's going to go look for the big shots, he's also trusts the fact that his preparation, his training that he's been put through is going to come into play where he picks his spots and he could throw the punches and he could also move and he could also, like, incorporate that right hand, the right hook, and even fire the hooks of the body if need be.
All right, Cart, what do you think?
Well, let me give a little bit of a different take on it because I think with Joshua Claudio, it might be a little bit harder to tell when is the moment when you can go in and be a little bit more aggressive. Because he is pretty relaxed and tentative. Sometimes it's hard to tell if Claudio is tired or if he's just relaxed. And I think for Claudio, there's two ways to approach the fight and try and win it. One would be to come out the gate, guns blazing. And another would be to wait for Manny to do exactly what Doug Fisher said. He does get bored. Wait for him to get bored, and then pick your spots later in the fight and try and take him out then. I think those are, if he follows one of those two game plans, he has a pretty good chance to win the fight. What he can't do is just keep his guard up the whole fight and not do a whole lot other than throw a jab here and there and then a body shot here and there, an uppercut here and there. He needs to pick a moment in the fight, whether it be early or whether it be late. Because I don't think he can go 12 hard. Like, Manny can go 12 rounds hard. Claudio, he can't.
I think Manny
can't do it.
I think Manny's made to go 15 rounds. You know, if we were back in that era, he fits that bill of being a 15-round fighter.
I mean, mm-hmm. He certainly could be a 15-round fighter, that's for sure. But I think for Claudio, he needs to decide when it is he wants to make his big moves, because I don't think he has 12 hard rounds. He probably only has, you know, six rounds where he can go real hard, if that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
I'm surprised. Let me ask you guys this, because, you know, when it was announced that it was going to be in Texas at their new big stadium there, how surprised are you guys that 30,000 seats already have been sold? I mean, if ever anybody was questioning if he had the star magnitude, by selling that many tickets, it just tells you he could fight anywhere in the world, and he'll probably sell out the venue.
No doubt. I mean, I think he's the face of boxing right now. There's only two guys you could say are the face of boxing, and that's Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather. But I think at this moment in time, I think Manny Pacquiao is the face. He's probably going to sell more tickets than anybody. If he's the A fighter and there isn't another guy there with him, if it's just a Joe Schmo, I think Manny is the guy to sell out venues. There's no doubt there.
And you got to give this guy credit, whether you like him or not, whether if you're a Manny fan or not. I'm going to say this. This is the thing I do like about Manny, what he does bring to the table, because when has it been for quite some time where you see somebody that's a pound for pound or a face of boxing come to fight? You know, where a lot of times Oscar De La Hoya was criticized when he was the face of boxing that, you know, he would coast around or he was not prepared or he was not conditioned. Right now, we have a fighter that is conditioned, he's prepared, and willing to fight. Anyways, we got to take a really quick break. We do got a lot of other calls in, so everybody that's calling in right now, you know, bear with us. We do have Jacob Stitch Duran to come in around 4 o'clock or so to chop it up with us about boxing, about his take and his prediction on the March 13 showdown between Manny Pacquiao versus...
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, David. Hey, sorry to cut you off a little bit, but before we take the break, I just wanted to say thanks a lot for letting me go or let me be on the show. I need to kind of take off myself, but I appreciate the time, man. And it's been a long time since we hung out, dude. I'll do it again. And thanks to all the other guys for saying their part and letting me be a part of it, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, brother, it's always a pleasure, man, to have you on. I'll hit you up a little later on to find out what fight you're going to go to, because I know we always end up meeting up, and maybe we can commute together.
Okay, yeah, definitely, bro. And everybody else, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and take care, and let's look forward to some great few months of boxing, huh?
Absolutely, brother. Well, there you go. Cesar Sangonda. Man, I can't believe I just messed up your last name, dog. Cesar Sangonda. What's wrong with me? Chris, what's wrong with me right now, dog?
We don't have enough time for me to answer that question.
Oh, man. Oh, I know Caesar's going to end up hitting me when he sees me, man. And it was from Diamond Boxing. It's my boy, my man right there from Diamond Boxing. He's a good, good dude. So we're going to take a really quick break. We come back. We should have the rest of the remaining guests on with us. Like I said, we got Jacob Stitch Duran, a cut man, fairly well known. I mean, if you don't know who he is, you might want to Google him up really quick. He's one of the premier cutmen for MMA and all the way down to boxing. He's the cutman for Vitaly Klitschko, among other fighters out there. You know, he's a really well respected guy in the boxing game. So hold on, I think we have another one of our guests before we go to break. Area code 209. Go ahead. Who's on with us, brother? And what's your pick?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, this is Nate Campbell.
The Galaxy Warrior, brother.
Yes. Actually, in this fight, I don't have a pick.
Really, man? Why? What happened?
Well, it's the issue with this.
Go ahead.
You want to pick. If you're a betting man, you pick Pacquiao.
Right.
You pick Pacquiao because he's been beating everybody. But Clyde's a strong guy. I mean, but then you don't know. I don't know which Clyde's going to show up.
Absolutely. I think you're right.
You can't have him stand there taking all those shots off the gloves and expecting to win the fight.
Nate, let me ask you this, man, because, you know, Manny and his camp have been criticized in the past. You know, when they stepped in with Miguel Cotto, it was at 145. Okay. Before that, you know, there was talk about Mayweather, and they were saying 147, and we'll fine you $10,000 or so plus money if you go above that pound, you know, day of the fight. Now, with Joshua Calati is a known fighter to blow up to almost close to super middleweight. They're not asking for anything. Is that in some way a sign of not taking you too serious because they don't feel that you're that much of a threat?
Well, you know what? It could be a lot of different things. I mean, it could be a lot of things. He might not take him seriously. I mean, let me tell you something. Claudio ain't got nothing to lose. Making the most money of his career, for one. And then again, for two, you're talking about a young man who has dealt with adversity his whole career. He came up in the hardest of hard situations in an impoverished country. You know what I'm saying? Claudio's fighting for pride and country, and he's also fighting for respect. And, I mean, so, Claudio, I hope for his sake you don't take Claudio for a joke, because he is none.
I mean, I don't think he's a joke. This guy is obviously a real, real contender in his prime and a legitimate opponent for Manny Pacquiao at this time. You know, I want to ask really quick, you know, Nate, before I let you go. You signed with Golden Boy. There's already some talk about you and Victor stepping in the ring in May. Let me ask you this. Right now, I'm looking at the Golden Boy is kind of looking at, okay, who do we invest our money behind? Nate Campbell, Victor Ortiz. Let's put them in. Let's throw a bone in the middle of the canvas, and let's see who gets it first. Are you taking it like that?
Let me tell you something. Every fight I get, I take like that. You got to come to fight me, brother. I mean, a lot of people who look at my last fight and say, well, Nate Campbell was getting old. Dude, let me tell you something. I was taking my time. I was doing what all great fighters do as they get older. We don't rush. I was setting the table, taking my time. In this fight, I'm gonna wait. I'm not gonna waste a moment getting going, because I feel like I'm always at odds with the judges, and I don't think I'm gonna get what I need if I let him get off.
Hey Nate, it's your boy Strikehearts here. Your biggest
What's up,
fan. How's it going?
My dude, me and Jess talk on the phone like regular old friends. So. Y'all gotta excuse us.
Yeah, exactly. Nate, I want to know how you. I'm assuming you watched Victor's fight, right?
I didn't.
You didn't yet.
I didn't watch the fight.
Let me tell you something. I don't know if somebody else has already told you.
I heard a lot of things about it. Some people were saying he was getting work and he just was trying to get work in. And some
did you
like
hear
he
anybody
like
tell you yet that David Mendoza was the referee for the fight?
No,
because he was, and I don't exactly know how to take that. I don't. Sometimes my mind starts to run conspiracies, and I worry about my fighters. And I'm saying, are they trying to send Nate Campbell a message by making David Mendoza the referee for this fight with his next opponent?
He ain't gonna be refereeing my fight.
Right. I was just worried. As soon as I saw him, you know, I lost my breath for a second. I said, are they trying to send Nate Campbell a message? are they trying to say this is how they're going to do him again? Uh-huh.
I'm gonna send them a message this time. They may not like the way I pose it, but I'm gonna send them a message. I mean, let me explain something to you. David Mendoza, everybody knows that what David Mendoza has done. And if anybody who loves boxing, he'll be remembered as a guy that stood in front of the California Commission and pissed the people off so bad they told him just sit down. They told him just sit down. So don't listen. Yeah, enough, Mrs. That's enough. I mean,
right.
You made a fool of yourself on. He made a fool of himself on ESPN on Showtime by even trying to clean up that garbage he pulled. And the sad part about it is, so many people now know that he's full of it. I mean, you
absolutely
can't change. You look, let me tell you something. Being full of dog pockets doesn't change with the fighter you referee.
Uh-huh.
He's a California bias referee.
Absolutely. That's what I was a little bit worried about seeing him at that fight. I'm thinking,
well,
he's
in California. I mean, if you're a Golden Boy, don't care who the referee is because it was their fighter, so it didn't make a difference. They put him in with a guy that couldn't punch.
Uh-huh.
You know, they put him in with a guy that couldn't hit. The guy he was in with couldn't hit. He couldn't, I mean, he couldn't crush an egg with lead boots.
I wish you had seen the fight, so I got a chance to talk to you about it. But I know I'll catch up with you later about it. But I think Victor had your fight, the fight with you in mind during that fight. I think he was actually holding back a lot because he didn't really want you to see some things.
Let me tell you something. If he thinks Madonna gave him fits, I'm a whole nother animal. McDonald's just a rugged, rough, tough, in-your-face kind of fighter.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Here's what I am. I'm a skilled, rugged, rough, tough fighter.
I think he's being rushed, Nate. I think he's being rushed being put in there with you. Honestly, I think that's a little bit too rushed right now. And really, if they're looking to build this kid to be a superstar, I think by putting him in with you, it's not going to happen for him, unfortunately. That's not going
to
happen.
Guess what? I'm going to be in the kind of shape. I plan to be in the kind of shape, physically in the kind of shape, and mentally in the kind of shape that you have never seen me in. I'm looking at strength and conditioning people to come in now with me. I'm actually going to come in as shredded as I was for the Diaz fight.
Right.
There you go.
Physically as shredded as I was for that fight. I want to put the kind of work in 3 months I'll be in training camp.
Nate, I want to ask you something really quick, and then I got to let you go because we got to go on break. Really quick, we had Timothy Bradley. I had Timothy Bradley on about 2 weeks ago, and your name came up just from him. I didn't bring up your name, but he brought up your name again. He said, and this ain't coming from me, so don't think I'm saying this, but he said, "What's up, punk? What's up?" Has there been any talk about you guys possibly getting back into the ring?
Let me tell you something. Tim Bradley's the kind of guy that makes those kind of statements from a long distance or from behind his daddy. He won't say it when it's me and him one-on-one. You know, I'm that dude that got right in his face on international TV, and he was doing, what did you see him do? Let's call a spade a spade. What'd you see him do?
Look at the floor.
What'd you see him do? Did he not punk out? Come on, y'all.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he did, man. He did, you know. And when we had you guys both on the radio show and leaving in the ring, obviously he didn't have a whole lot to say. So I just wanted to hear your take.
He can't run with me. Let me tell you something. Certain dogs should stay on the porch. They ain't even a dog. That's a puppy.
Oh.
That's a puppy.
Yeah, this is a rematch.
That's a puppy.
That I really need to see happen, man.
He can get it. Let me tell y'all something. That little boy, that boy can get it whenever he want it. He can get it whenever he want it.
So what do you make about him whining about not being able to find an opponent right now?
He only wants meaningful fights. What has he done to deserve it? If anything, I should be the one screaming about only meaningful fights. I fought the best fighters of my era. He done fought the best. He done fought the worst C-class fighters around.
Mm-hmm.
He has yet to fight an A-level fighter. Fair in a fair fight. Kendall Holt got stopped last night, I heard.
Yeah,
he did.
He
reminded
me
of
he retired in the sixth round. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. It reminded me of your fight with Ali Funica, except for you came out on top. It was another tough cat from Africa that nobody's really heard of until last night.
And guess what? Bradley ain't going to fight nobody. He ain't going to fight nobody. He's going to stay away, and he's going to talk his way into twos and twos until he can get a multi-million-dollar payday. I'd be long gone by the time he wants to fight me.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Well, hey, Nate, man, I appreciate you coming through, man, on Leaving the Ring, brother. Can't wait to have you on again.
Thank y'all so much, man.
And then I got to say this,
thank
too.
Thank y'all so much.
Thank
Keep
you, brother.
Keep training
Thank
hard,
you.
Nate. I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, I'm like I said, I'm going to put the kind of work in. It's going to blow y'all mind for this fight.
I hope so, brother. I hope so. And I got to give a real quick shout-out to our PR that patched in Nick Campbell because she's really sick right now, Alex Smirnoff. I'm not going to attempt her last name because she's got a German last name. It's really hard and stuff, you know, but I know that she's sick, you know. But all right, man, thank you guys very much. So anyways, I'm going to got to take a quick break. You know, with Nate Campbell, everybody else, we got Jacob Stitch Duran on the line, you know, and I'm going to have to say Alex Smirzansky, who's a PR for Leaving in the Ring. And right now she's really, really, really ill. But just to show how much dedication she has to the show, just like the other guys that work for us, Red and Art and everybody else that, you know, David Chen, Strike and Chris and Blood and all the guys, man, that make this thing work. We, you know, two soldiers. So, you know, I got to give my shout outs to my people and the people that follow us and stuff. But hey, I got to go take a quick break. We're going to be gone for about 10 minutes. When we come back from that 10 minute break, we should have Jacob Stitch Duran. And then I still got some sound bites from Roach making his prediction and even Kaladi and David Avila.
You're listening to Leaving in the Ring.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound.
People gon' dance.
to give the record a second and a chance to hitting people like a scene of amazing. And while they slipping back, my feet is planted in the pavement. Crumble I can never do. So now I'm looking dead at you. What are you gonna do? You listen to the knowledge of a scholar. You say how I breathe, tell them how I holler. I'm the E-double, and I proclaim my name. Straight up, good game, peace, all game. I'm like a rhino, running through the roughest pack. They figure I'm a trigger, happy nigga, so they step back. Breathe. The microphone is boots last the longest, so news is strong. It ain't a game, it's plain to see. You listen to the sounds of breathe. There ain't no future in your front. I never got caught with a deal. And if you ever do, you'll never be with Leo. Serving in the Cherokee, or maybe it's a deal. Like I'm like Ben, so we'll get it up a meal. Never have to worry about my posse getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo, TB, pop the strong. Cause we don't go for playing, wanna play the rapper ball. When I'm on the mic, I ain't for playing, not at all. Cause I clock 10 G's a week, booming at my peak. Always see East sober, but I do get geeked. I can give you a job, a place to eat. Hardy, meet your homeboy Marty at a B.O.B. Party taking over, barking like a dog named Rover. I'm picking fingers like a four-leaf clover. Ain't biting words on the mic, cause they can hold us. So now they saying egg breed is getting old. Playing the future of your mind. The B, the R to the double E-T, and down with my homie G-A-S and O-E, and suckers call him fatty cause he still be disagreeing. I don't give a cause I'm from F-L-I-M-P in a city where pity runs low. If you ever shoot through my city, now you know. Cause we are strictly business and we also got a pride. And if you don't like it, I suggest you break wide. Suckers study looking for the ammo when he wire. Thinking that illegal is the best and so they dying. I ain't got time to see a thing thing now. To give up all his money and to give up what he got. That's the way I am, and MCB cannot be different. Never change the ways for the world or the government. If it was the president, then I would say facts. You leave it up to me, I'll paint the White House black and ain't no future in your front. Pocket, not from rolling. If I was a fiend, then my gold would be stolen. Put my name Breed on everything I own. And when I get my Jeep, I'm putting Breed on the chrome. Shine it up good, kick it through my neighborhood. Motorola phone, fat rims in the Kenwood. Put the kid around it, and then I'll have to drop. Just because the riding people think I'm stolen rocks, but ain't no future in your the rules of the world. Live my life raw, cause I never liked the law. Wear top tens on my ass, Eugene. Selling big gates and tip a tat to the fiend. Stock much dollars, but I never break a sweat. Trying to move out, my pocket saying, you got my back and I got yours. What time is it? Turn down the door. Let's start this party, all right? Kick out that fat fat band.
Okay, man, we're back from our break, and I believe we got our next guest on the line with us. We got Jacob Stitch Duran, one of the most respected cutmen in the business of MMA and boxing. Stitch, you on the line with us, brother?
I'm on the line. How you guys doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How's things going for you? I know you're always busy. You're always somewhere, out and about, stitching somebody up.
Yeah, that seems to be the nature of my game, but I love it. If it's not boxing, it's MMA, and, if it's not either one of those, I'm doing something somewhere. But right now I'm in Las Vegas and getting ready to hang out in Daytona Beach this coming weekend.
Oh, man. Talk about envying somebody at this moment right now, Stitch. You know what I mean? I say.
I'll tell you what. The alternative was, this is a lot better because, I grew up as a farm worker in the San Joaquin Valley, and that's something I never forget. But it's nice to get up and say that, I'm in the big leagues with the big boys now.
Absolutely, brother. Well, I know a lot of fight fans know your face. It's recognized. And I tell you what, man, it's a pleasure having you on. Every time I see you, I always tell, family members, hey, I know him. I know that about the right there,
Right on, man. I appreciate it.
Well, let's go you got this big fight coming up March 13th between Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati. Now, you know, even though you're just, you know, people will go like, well, he's a cut man, but you got a lot of knowledge in the game. You've been around the game for some time, you know, so it's appreciated to hear your take about certain fights, and I like to hear your prediction and what happens in that fight between those two warriors when they step in March 13th.
Yeah, well, you know, and even before I was a cut man, I mean, I was a trainer, and I've, you know, trained many of boxers and kickboxers, so, you know, I know what it's like to be in the trenches as a trainer, you know, though right now, I mean, I'm just kind of doing, you know, working as a cut man full-time, but, you know, the Joshua Clotty and Manny Pacquiao fight is really kind of an interesting fight, and, you know, as you were looking, everybody, I mean, the big thing was Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, and, you know, I mean, it just blossomed into a major piece of conversation that everybody was talking about it, and, you know, once that went through, it kind of like took all the wind out of the sails, and, you know, they brought in Joshua Clotty to fight Manny Pacquiao, and, you know, in all fairness to me, the interest just isn't like it used to be. Actually, I'm more excited for the Shane Mosley and Mayweather fight because, you know, taking nothing away from Joshua Clotty, you know, number one, it's great that he gets that opportunity to fight it in the big leagues and to make some nice money, you know, and Manny Pacquiao, you know, he's always in top shape, and, you know, Freddie Roach does a great job in keeping him focused, but I just kind of wonder how much focus he's in for this fight.
You know, and that's a good point there. I mean, I was asking that a little while ago. I was wondering, you know, and I don't know, Stitch, I was, this is what I was curious about because, you know, Manny's camp, not Manny himself, but his camp had been criticized about the Miguel Cotto, you know, oh, the 145, and that's the way we want. And even with the proposed Floyd Mayweather fight, there was the 147, and can't come above it. If you do, you get penalized $10,000 on the pound. Now, with Joshua Calati, who's a known fighter, not to, you know, to blow up to almost close to three weight classes, there's not been any stipulation about that, and that kind of questions me. I mean, makes me question: are they taking Joshua Calati as a serious threat?
No, not at all. And you know, but I tell you what, this is what the only thing that makes me interested in this fight is that point that you're just bringing across because, you know, I know Joshua Calati is working. I mean, this is a golden opportunity for him. So he's working at the A level to work with an A level fighter. But in the same token, and that'd be my concern with the Manny Pacquiao's and the camp is, you know, they're doing all these, you know, interviews with Jimmy Kimball, and they're doing all this, and they're doing all the way that, and they're taking away from their main focus of fighting somebody like Joshua Calati. So, you know, if you're going to get an underdog and put some money on an underdog, Calati might be the man. You know, whether he beats him, I don't know if he'll be able to knock out Manny Pacquiao, but, you know, he could just take him out of his game plan and beat him on a decision.
Well, sis, let me ask you this, okay, because being that you're a cut man and you've been in these situations before, if you're on Joshua Calati's corner, and Joshua has not been known to be a guy that cuts very easily, he's a guy that's a durable guy, strong guy, takes a lot of hits, doesn't seem to bruise up at all, you know, or cut, but he's never been in with a Manny Pacquiao, you know, a guy that throws thousands of punches, throws a lot of shots. If he was to get a cut, how stressful is it for yourself to stitch up your man, patch up your man, when you know that he's got a guy in front of him that throws at a high volume and a large amount of shots?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And, you know, whenever I work any fight, I always look at worst-case scenario. And, you know, number one, let's say I was working with Joshua Calati, then, you know, number one, I keep eyes on him because I know he's going to be in a fight where for 10, 12 rounds, they're going to be throwing him but chingazos. So every round, whether he's cut or not, I'm keeping eyes on him. I'm keeping the ends well on him, so I'm doing a lot of preventive maintenance on him. In the event that he gets cut, then I got to look at it just like every other cut, is I got to give him that opportunity to continue going. But, you know, in the same token, is I'm looking at both fighters, Manny Pacquiao has a tendency of cutting more than a Joshua Calati. And, you know, the thing with Manny Pacquiao is that his cuts can become dangerous because he gets pretty nice cuts. So that's always a problem, and that's something me as a cut man, I look at is, you know, how do I take care of my guy, but what are the possibilities of the other guy getting cut, and the possibilities of Manny Pacquiao getting cut are pretty probable.
Let me ask you this. anytime you're in there and you got a guy that's got a serious cut, okay, and you're looking at him and you're trying to fix it, you're trying to patch it up, but you have a ring doctor that needs to do his job as well and get in there and examine it, does that mess up your flow of continuing your job? Because obviously they're taking – so you only have 60 seconds or so to do your job. It takes away that crucial timing for you.
Yeah, well, you know, it takes you out of a rhythm, no doubt about it. But, you know, what I always do in any fight is I'll go and I'll meet with the doctors and I'll let them know what I do and this is what I do. And, you know, the bottom line is the safety of the fighter. And the doctor has the ultimate decision on whether he stops the fight or not. But I always tell him, you know, give me that opportunity to work on the fighter. And you know, and the things we look at in working on a cut is optical damage or nerve damage or whether the blood gets in the fighter's eye where really he has a disadvantage. And you know, if I could eliminate those and have the doctor work with me, then I think I've done my job. And communications with the doctors are a key element. And, you know, the doctors know me, and doctors and referees will tell you, you know, a lot of my determination comes on who the cut man is. So, you know, if you got a reputable cut man, then they're going to give that cut man the opportunity to work on a cut.
Have you ever been in a position where the cut's really, really bad? You're letting the trainer know, you know what, we can look at some permanent damage here. We need to stop this fight. And the trainer looks at you and completely ignores your advice.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and nobody's ever asked that, and I'm glad you brought that up. But, you know, my job is, yeah, to definitely, I mean, give that opportunity, that fighter that opportunity. And I have worked with some corners that I've told them, you know, this guy has a pretty bad cut. I've even told, you know, the fighter, look, you got to go up and you got to give it your best shot because chances of the doctor stopping the fight are pretty good. You know, usually at this level that I'm at now, if I explain that to somebody, whether it's the trainer or whether it's the doctor, I think they're going to listen to me. And but, you know, going up early in my career when, you know, when I was green and the guys I was working with were green, is a lot of times trainers work on pure machoism and don't really know or know how to take care of a fighter. And, you know, as you get into the bigger leagues and these guys understand that, you know, there could be some situation. When Fernando Vargas fought Shane Mosley, when he ended up with that big old swelling in his eye, that hematoma, you know, I gave him two more rounds and to the point where his eye was closing, but I told him and his trainer, you got to go out there and kick his ass because, you know what, doctors are going to stop the fight, and they did that, you know. So, yeah, communications is a big part.
Absolutely, I agree, brother. Well, Stitch, man, I appreciate you coming through and talking to us on Leaving the Ring. And, you know, and everything that you say is of great, great value. Before I let you go, though, Stitch, can you give us some of the names out there that if there's some fight fans right now, they're listening, they're like, they can't seem to put the name with the face. What are some of the guys, the big names that you work with in boxing and MMA right now currently?
Well, you know, people say I look like Carlos Santana and James Olmos, but, you know, I came out in the – you know, I played myself in the Rocky Balboa movie with Mason the Lion Dixon, but I work with Andre Ward, Andre Durrell, the two Klitschko brothers. But then, you know, a lot of people recognize me as being the primary cut man in the UFC. I'm the guy with the glasses, the mustache, and the hair. So if you're watching UFC, you'll probably see me.
Absolutely, brother. Hey, Stitch, man, I appreciate you coming through, brother. You take it easy.
All right, great show, and listen, anytime, man. My phone's always open.
Órale. Okay, man, thank you.
Sure enough. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. You had Jacob Stitch Duran on the line with us, and you know, man, I mean, the guy definitely has got some knowledge. He's been around. You got to have some knowledge. I mean, you got to have a lot of knowledge, I would have to say, in my opinion, to be a cut man, right, Strike?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, very important, obviously. If you don't have a good cut man in there, you might have a short night, and when you maybe didn't have to have a short night. So it doesn't get much more important than your cut man. It's like almost like an assistant trainer, really. So, I mean, a lot of times you'll see them give almost as much advice as the trainer does. So,
We got some more callers that are going to be calling in and talk to us a little bit about their pick between the showdown with Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Kalati. I'm a little surprised, though, that our MMA correspondent here, Chris, didn't jump in and did some questions about the MMA world and about some of the fights and he's seen him in some predicaments because, if anything, MMA has a lot of cuts and bleeding in their bouts.
You know, I didn't know how long you were going to have him on. I'm kind of not up to date on how many guests you have and when people are going to come in, so... Hopefully, you know, we can get him back on. He said his line's always open because there is a lot of fights I'd like to ask him about because there is a lot of blood. And there's actually been a couple of fights. I don't know if he was actually working the corner or not. Depends because, like he said, unlike a boxing match where you usually work, like he'll work for a Vitaly or Vladimir Klitschko, but on a UFC, he'll work one corner for every single fighter that entire night. So there have been a couple of fights that have been just bloodbaths that have somehow continued to go on. And, I mean, there's blood all over the mat. It looks like a damn crime scene in there. And I've been surprised that they haven't been stopped. And been curious to ask him if he's been involved in those and what he thought about the fights not being stopped at the time. So, you know, like you said, hopefully we can get him on again and I can ask him a plethora of questions that I have for him.
Absolutely. You know, we definitely are going to get him on again because that's one guy I would love just to pick in his brain about certain situations, scenarios, and his take about sometimes when fights should be stopped. And, you know, he's got the bird eye view right there of what's going on when it comes down to decisions that should be made in boxing. I do want to play David Avila's take and his call about the Manny Pacquiao fight, if I could find it. For some reason, I'm not finding it right now. I don't know why I'm not finding it. It could have been erased. Anyways, let me check. You know what? I'm gonna make a replay of. I think we might have our next guest. Let me get that first. So area code 213, brother, what's on your mind? What's your name and what's your pick for the upcoming fight between Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Kalati?
What's up, man? I'm Eric Esteban of the Manny Pacquiao Show, and you know who I'm picking.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. I'm real good.
Well, you know, I don't know if a lot of fight fans, I'm pretty sure a lot of fight fans have came across your video and your show of Manny Pacquiao. It's actually one of my favorite shows, you know. Let me ask you this. How did the idea come about, and how have the fans of Manny Pacquiao, because if anything, the fans of Manny Pacquiao, they can be a little brutal sometimes. How have they received you?
All right. Well, the first episode was kind of the litmus test for the whole thing, because it was just a sketch idea at the beginning. I'd written, you know, a few things about, because I'm a sketch comedy artist from Chicago, and I moved here to L.A. and kind of got tired of not getting cast anything because I'm, you know, kind of ambiguous as far as I look. So I figured, why not play a Filipino character because I'm Filipino?
Right.
And so I started, you know, really getting into Manny Pacquiao because, I mean, obviously he's this, like, superstar. And to be honest, my father's a big boxing fan. So I pay-per-viewed the De La Hoya fight, and we were watching it together. And, you know, I'd seen a few Manny Pacquiao fights before, and, I'm a proud Filipino, but I'd never really seen my father watch it like that.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw the pride in his eyes, I was like, man, I gotta figure something out. I got to do something. You know what I mean? Because
right,
it just made me feel proud to see his pride. You know what I mean? So I'd watched a lot of Carol Burnett show and Martin Lawrence is one of my big influences. So, you know, like Roscoe the Snot-Nosed Kid and Tim Conway with his midget golfer.
Right, yeah.
So I just made a Filipino-American version. And it turned into Manny Pacquiao. And 14 episodes later, here we are talking to you guys. It's pretty cool, actually.
It is. I mean, the first time I came across it, I wasn't really sure. I was like, wait, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
And the first episode was with you. You were doing Manny Pacquiao, and you had Manny Hatton on. And I got to tell you, man, I was off my chair. I was rolling. I called my kids in, you know, because, you know, my kids, obviously, they love Manny Pacquiao, too. And my little ones, and let me say this, the comedy that you bring to it, it's not only is it entertaining, but honestly, it's open to any cultural background because it's funny. You know, it's
well,
it's just
thank
that
you, man. I appreciate that.
You know,
well, you know, it's funny you bring up episode 10 because it's one of those that I really it's one of my favorites. We talked about boxing, and of course we joke around about how you know Manny Pacquiao made Ricky Hatton look pretty bad in their fight, but we also talk about the symbolism behind the Filipino flag. And kind of use these funny characters to educate people about the Filipino flag. And, you know, the Manny Pacquiao Show has kind of given me this platform as an artist to kind of show the beauty of the Filipino culture besides Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, some other upcoming episodes we're having, you know, it's funny because Oliver Suarez, the guy you had on from SportsHypeBoxing.com.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He plays in some of the later episodes. He plays Mini Boo Boy.
Oh, is that him?
Best friend.
Is that
that's him? That's him. He was being he is being very modest, but he especially going forward, the newer Manny Pacquiao episodes, Mini Pacquiao episodes, are a lot of his doing. So I mean, he's become a big part of Team Mini Pacquiao.
Oh,
and he's Mini Boo Boy, and he is hilarious. He speaks all in Tagalog, and then we do subtitles for him.
I've
and
seen
it's
that.
Really,
it's
yeah.
great.
And,
it's great. Yeah.
And he's actually going to be doing coverage of the Dallas fight because I always make the joke because I've been in communication with Top Rank through Twitter. I always share the newer videos with them, and they'll always tweet back like funny stuff or something. I think it was the most recent fight with Cotto. They were like, "Are you going to be in Vegas?" And I said, "Listen, my wallets are mini as well as the characters, so I can go to Vegas." And Dallas is probably the same thing.
Absolutely, brother. Well, let me ask you this, okay? First off, can we get Mini on the line to get his? What he's going to do that night? What's his pick with Joshua Kaladi versus Joseph?
You know what? Hold on. Let me go get him. He's got short legs, so it takes him a little while to get to the phone. Hold up. Let me go get him.
Hoy, Mini! Liga dito! Hoy! Hello?
Hello,
this
Mini. How you doing? How you doing, Mini?
I'm doing very good. Is this David?
This is David from Leaving in the Ring, brother. And I was just talking
wow.
to
Wow! You know, it's like I'm a big star and I'm on a radio show and talking on the phone. It's crazy.
You are a big star, first off. I mean, I got to say, you're a big star because there's thousands and thousands of people that are tuning into your show. But, I mean, let me ask you this. What's going to happen that night, March 13th?
Well, let me tell you this. In the most recent episode when I met with Bumble Clatty, who is Joshua Clatty's shortest, biggest fan, I told him this. I told him that Manny Pacquiao is like a hurricane with a tsunami on the top. That means he's very hard to beat. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. Now, what was the name of Manny Pacquiao? What was his full name?
His name is Bumble Clatty. That is his name.
Oh, Bumble Clatty, wow.
Bumble Clatty is his name. Yes. You can Google the origins of his name. It's, you know, it's not so complimentary to Joshua Clatty, but it's good for Manny Pacquiao, which is what my show is all about.
You're right. That's what it's all about. Now, Mini, how do people, if this is the first time them listening to you, how do they find you on the internet and stream a video of yours?
You know, really, the best way is to go to YouTube. Everybody knows YouTube, right?
Right.
And then you go on the search of YouTube, and you just type Mini Pacquiao. Minny Pacquiao. You know, sometimes people don't know how to spell Pacquiao, but it will spell it for you. Pacquiao.
Absolutely.
Pacquiao. I know how to spell it because I type it all the time.
Now, Mini, before I let you go, because we have another guest on the line that we got to get to before the end of the show, let me ask
for
you
sure.
this. Joshua Kaladi, you pass him. Floyd Mayweather Jr., what is your thoughts about him?
Listen to me about that Floyd Mayweather. Okay, this guy, he just likes to talk a lot. He talks and talks. I think he's a chicken. That's what I think. I think he does not want to fight Manny Pacquiao, and I think he's going to lose to Shane Mosley. And like Freddie Roach, I would rather see Mosley fight Pacquiao. That's my prediction. Manny Pacquiao, you heard it here first on Liberty in the Ring from Manny Pacquiao.
There you go, heard it.
For Christmas.
Pacquiao Mosley for Christmas. Let me get Eric back on the line, Manny. It was great talking to you, brother.
Okay, it's nice meeting you, Dave. Give me the phone, fool. Anyway.
Eric, hey, man. Hey, brother. It was great for you to bring on Manny Pacquiao online with us. I got to say, brother, it was my pleasure. I'm a fan. I am a fan. You know, I love
your
show. Well,
thank you, man. I appreciate just being able to be on the show. And I appreciate the support that you've given me because, I mean, like I said, the boxing community is where people are going to be most entertained because there are some more intricate arguments to boxing. And like you said, there's nothing like talking about boxing. And my show is kind of talking about boxing in a funny way. So thank you again for giving me this opportunity, bro.
Let me ask you just one more thing before I let you go because I do have other guests that are waiting. Just bear with us, the other people that are online waiting. I want to ask, Eric, have you started or is there any way, let's say a fan, kids, especially kids, because, you know, they're seeing this. And I got to say, my little 8-year-old, his eyes just kind of got wide, you know, and he was like, oh, my God. How do they go about and maybe having a meet and greet with you? Are there going to be a day where you go meet Manny Pacquiao face to face? What are we going to see that episode?
This is that's really the crown jewel episode. That's the episode that I started this whole thing with that in mind. And that said, I'm planning on taking Manny Pacquiao to media day. This upcoming fight before they leave for Dallas. So whenever media day is, I'm trying to figure that out now. And Manny Pacquiao is going to be waiting in line and meeting Manny Pacquiao, and we'll have the cameras there, and hopefully we can get a great episode from it.
That would be great, and hopefully you get that done because I know I want to be tuning in to watch that. Eric, thank you very much, brother, for calling in and leaving in the ring, and I only can wish you the greatest success that looks like it. Looks like it drove down that right path to get the greatest success, you know, and the comedy is there. It's obviously a family comedy show, and I love it.
Well, thank you, man, and again, thank you again for letting me be a part of your show because it's a great show. I've been listening since the beginning, and it's great. It's a great show. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I can't wait to have you on again.
Yeah,
for sure. Whenever you want to, Bobo Claudio will be there. I'll even bring our Mayweather, which, you know, our Mayweather, Kareem Grimes, is hilarious. So check him out, too. Don't sleep on him.
We won't, brother. All right, Eric. You take it easy, brother.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Okay, now we're going to start patching in the other guys that have been on hold. I got two people on hold. I'm going to patch them both in at the same time. Area code 512, state your name, what's your pick? Area code 917, state your name, what's your pick?
Normal Lord, I like Pacquiao.
Pacquiao, brother, and what's your prediction on that fight? And
I think that's going to be a good fight. I think that's the better fight that the world's going to see. I think Claudio's been one of the shadow boxers, and I think Pacquiao's going to have his hands full for a little bit, but I think he's going to figure it out as the fight go along in the first couple of rounds, and, you know, it's going to be a good fight. I think Pacquiao might probably stop him in the 8th, 9th round, you know?
I think everybody's picking those rounds right there, 8th and 9th round, you know? For some reason, them rounds are really standing out, you know, and if I remember correctly, he finally stopped. Well, the corner finally, you know, gave up on Miguel Cotto. Let me ask you this: you know, what exactly do you think, though, that Manny needs to do? I mean, we know he's fast. We know he throws a lot of punches. But what are they going to be the key punches to make Joshua Kalati submit?
I think it's going to be. I think Joshua is a straight-up fighter, and I think when Manny comes around with that left hand from the southpaw position, it's going to be trouble because he's straight up, and the problem that Manny got to watch when he jumps in is that Joshua throws straight punches too, so he got to be careful in the early rounds of that straight right hand that he comes to. But I think as the fight go along, he's going to be hitting on Joshua unless Joshua make adjustments, which he really don't do in fights, you know what I mean? As the fight go along, he keeps the same style.
Absolutely. You know, wait, hold on. I'm just getting hit up right now. Is this Lamar Colazo's head trainer? Hello, brother. This is a Colossal's head trainer, right? That I'm speaking to right now. Hello, are you there? Or did I lose you?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It looks like Bumble Claudie got him. I don't know what happened to him.
Okay, let me go with the caller 917. Are you there, brother? What's your name and what's your pick?
This is Normal Lord. I was talking to you before, Louis Colossus trainer.
Oh, there you go,
there
brother.
We go.
Not bad. You know, I thought I had you on the line. For some reason, it just wasn't going through. First of all, before I even start asking about Joshua Kalati and Manny Pacquiao, what happened with Andre Berto deciding to go the other route and going after Carlos Quintana rather than you guys?
Well, what happened? We had a conversation with some of Lou DiBella's people, and we were trying to get Quintana and Louis on the undercard of Berto trying to fight the win out of that, because we know Berto's been trying to duck Louis a little bit. I don't blame him. I think Louis, he knows Louis is a better fighter. And he's trying to just, you know, get his way back with lefties or whatever his excuses are. We don't have no excuses. I mean, we fight anybody, left, right, center, whatever they come with. We, you know, Louis put his name on any dotted line. And these guys are just, you know, and I'm disappointed with HBO because that was one of the fights of the year. And Ross Greenberg didn't step up and tell them they should have an immediate rematch, you know, just like he did with the Paulie Malignaggi fight. You know, what's the difference with Louis fighting that fight? They should have done that in the WBC. Kind of reeled back on their word, because the fight with that fight was supposed to be him and Mosley, and now Mosley pulled out the fight, so I thought we was going to be the next one in line, and they haven't been living up to that. They're trying to get us to fight for interim title with Aiden from Germany, and I mean, we're willing to fight, but nobody hasn't come and put their name on the dotted line to fight Louis Colazo. You know, he's the guy, he's the odd guy out. You know, you hear about Paul Williams fight Cintron, we would fight Cintron at 147. We would fight Paul at 147. Whoever comes to the table, we were going to fight, because Louis, to me, Louis is the best fighter in the 147. He just gets robbed every time he fights. We don't have probably the powerhouse of a promoter like what he used to be. And, you know, we just get the job handed to us, man.
Do you think maybe part of the reason why you didn't get the rematch is because, like you said, with Paulie, he was really loud after that first fight? Whereas Louis, he was just kind of quiet and respectful in the ring after the fight in the interview. I'm not saying that isn't his personality, but I'm saying, do you think that might be why Paulie Malignaggi got a rematch and you didn't?
Could be. I want that. I like Paulie. I think Paulie's a great guy. You know, he's a good fighter. You know what I'm saying? But I think in Louis, if you're going to be a gentleman of boxing, you know, you respect the other fighter, and that's what Louis did. But if it calls for disrespect, I mean, we all could disrespect each other if that's the case. But if HBO wants to put on the best fight, these are the fights they need to call out. You know, put the best guys on. Not because promoters have disagreements. The TV should be looking for the best fights, not the best promoter. You know, and this is what's going on with boxing. Now, you know, it's like all Lou DiBella guys are fighting all Al Heyman guys. You know what I'm saying? And this is like it's a two-way zone, you know, and it's not like the way boxing should be. Boxing should be where if you want the best fight, let the best fighters come out and fight. You know, I looked at a fight on ESPN the other day. Probably should have been on HBO Boxing After Dark with Roman
yeah.
and you know, Escalante, that fight should have
exactly.
been on, you know. I mean, these are the fights that's robbing the public, man, of boxing, you know, and I think it's all political, and boxing need to get away from that. You know, we thought we was getting away from it, but HBO keep going on with the same guys, you know what I mean? Give the other guys. They got guys with maybe four or five losses, you know. I mean, at one point, you know, before Arturo Gatti came on the scene, he had losses, and he put on some of the most exciting fights. Put guys like that on, you know, so we could enjoy boxing again, not the guys who are undefeated and trying to protect their records, you know.
Couldn't agree more.
Couldn't agree more at all, brother. You know, so let's go right into it. What's your pick about Joshua Kalati versus Manny Pacquiao? Could he pull the upset, or do you got him as your pick of pulling the upset?
Oh, you know, I'd like to see Kalati pull an upset. But like I said, he have to make adjustments in the style. If he don't make adjustments as the fight going along, Pacquiao is just going to have his way. Because after the fifth, sixth round, Joshua tends to run out of, you know, that power punches that he throws. He throws a lot of power punches. He don't make no adjustments. He stays straight up, and I think that's what Pacquiao is going to pay, you know, is going to pay a dividend with him coming in and out with the bounces. But Joshua do throw straight punches, so he got to be careful of the straight punches.
Let me ask you this. You know, when you – because right now, Joshua obviously was in the same position as your fighter, Luis Colazo. Now he's in the position where he can shine, okay? He can either make it or break it.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a mental do you think – on him right now, and even seeing like Luis Collazo right now, just kind of being laid back and not getting them feisty, how frustrating it is. But when they get that moment, for some reason, it's been a trend where they end up freezing on that moment.
Well,
how do you shake your fighter out of that?
Sometimes I don't think it's freezing. I think it's more or less like having the breaks. You know, like some close rounds will go to the favorite fighter. Some, you know, if Claudia come down to the Dakota fight, that fight should have, you know, was a good fight. I mean, people say he should have stood there and fight more or whatever. I thought he was winning the fight. Cotto ran the first couple of rounds, whatever he did, you know what I'm saying? But that was a fight that could have been a draw, easy as it could have been Cotto's fight, you know? And with Louis case, I mean, they both step up to the stage, man. I mean, he had won a brilliant fight with Ricky Hatton. He had a brilliant fight with all these guys that he fought, you know? And unfortunately, with the Mosley fight, he had a broken hand, but he stood there 12 rounds. And it's not about freezing. It's more about getting the exposure. When these guys get to the big stage, they only have one fight going into that big fight. The guys who won the big fight, they already had two or three fights getting to that point. So their tools are sharper than some of these guys, you know, like a Claudio or Louis Collazo. My two favorite guys are Louis and Claudio because they've been shadowed so much, you know, and now he getting his brace, and I'm glad for him, you know. And hopefully Claudio upset, you know. So I root for the underdog. I'm part of the underdog, so I got to be on that stage, you know.
I heard that, brother. Well, man, I appreciate you calling in and chopping it up with us and telling us a little bit what's going on with your fighter and your take about this upcoming fight, March 13th. You know, it's always a pleasure to have you on, brother. I can't wait to have you on again.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You guys are the best. Thanks, Ab.
Well, there you go. You know, I mean, yeah, man, it's you know, it really sucks to hear when you see a fighter out there that's putting in all the work and trying to get himself fights and he's not able to get them, you know. But before I go on that rant, I mean, I'm going to play the replay of Freddie Roach when he was on Leave It in the Ring Sunday, and he gave his prediction of what's going to happen on March 13th. What's going to be your prediction for March 13th, Freddie? What's your prediction on that fight with Joshua Collati?
You know, I know Claudio's a real tough guy, and he's got a good chin, but the game plan we have and the accumulation of punches that he's going to receive, I honestly think we can make him quit. I think we're going to be the first person to stop him, and maybe it'll be the referee. I don't think we'll knock him out, but we will stop him inside the 12.
There you go. We'll stop him with inside 12. And then, you know, we had my co-host and correspondent, Strikeout, had an interview with Joshua Collati, and this is what he had to say.
What would it mean for Ghana if you were to win this fight?
I think that's going to be a week, full week joy.
Really?
So they know Pacquiao a lot there because of Pacquiao, Billy Oscar, Billy Miguel Cotto. They watch all those fights. So they know Pacquiao's names a lot. So most of them thinking that this fight is a very hard fight for me.
Uh-huh.
And it's true. Everybody is true that this is not an easy fight at all because the way we are going to bang each other in the ring that day, it's not going to be easy thing, you see. So if I won this fight, they might be very, very happy. And I'm going to do the same by going in there and do the best I can to win.
Well, there you go. You know, he's going to do what he can and do the best that he can to win that match. You know, we got to go on a quick break, man. I know I need a break. I know my co-hosts need a break, Chris and Strikeheart. And I see other calls are on the line. Please bear with us. We got to take a quick break. We'll get back on the line and get your guys' quick predictions if you're still on with us on Leave It in the Ring. If you do want to call in, 347-215-7598. We still got up our Stand and Fight rundown, and sponsored by standandfight.com, our rundown on the news. There's some news that were brought up to my attention, and it's obviously we got to tackle it so we can let the fight fans know what's going on in the boxing world. But we'll be right back from a short break. Well, actually, not a short break. I'm going to take a minute.
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring. You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
Jacking JC, cause they got a Mercedes, and you know about his ladies and all his babies. You just wanna ride and get inside and run around town like Bonnie and Clyde. But see the moves you're making, the routes you're taking will lead to heartbreaking, and I'm not mistaken. You like his money, you'll be his honey. It's the truth, go to your great big dummy, dumb girl. Dumb girl. that makes you the ace. Dumb girl.
Then push it along. You'll be a fool to revive the fight. Is not the man. Cause you know, and I know, that you know who I am. A special shout out piece goes out to all my pals, you see. And a middle finger goes for all you punkin' peeps. Cause I love it when you whack and she's despise me. They get vexed, I'm all next and none can test me. I'm just a fight and see who's five for three and very brave. On top remaining, no, I'm training cause I misbehave. I come correct and full effect of all my holes in check. And before I get the butt, the gym must be a wreck. You see, my aura's positive, I don't promote no junk. See, I'm far from a bully and I ain't a punk. Extremity of rhythm, yeah, that's what you heard. So just clean out your ears and just check the word. Check the time. My name is John Doe and I sling white rock, but not on a corner, I work in a spot. I used to work for a fast food joint, busting my chops, and still I had to hop on the train, cause my change was so small. But now I got a Benz with white walls. Word. I open up the spot every morning, and keep things in check for my boss. One day I storm torture, a worker with a hypodermic needle, for a $10 loss. But I got plans of my own, I don't wanna be another man's flunky. I know the ins and outs of the drug game. Hey yo, I'm gonna make some dough off these junkies. I told my boss about my plan and said I wanna be my own man. Hey yo, I know you put me on, but yo, I gotta quit. I want my own shit. The scenario became a tearjerker. He even said I was his best worker, but I continued and he refused to listen. Became upset because I had ambition. Said he doesn't want me to leave and that I better think it over if I still wanna breathe. Doesn't that sound like a threat? Hey yo, you wanna play that way? No sweat. He left the spot and said he'll be back. Huh? Fuck that. Time to react. I looked across the room at the product. It was about $50,000 worth. Well, if the chips fall down, I'll just have to handle it. Yeah, so I'm stepping with the work. But now I'm 5,000, baby.
And I'm out of here.
Deep, don't fail me now.
Well, man, I hope you enjoyed that break. We only got a few more minutes left on Leave It in the Ring. So I got to do our rundown of the news, which is sponsored by StandAndFight.com. You can go check out the rundown on StandAndFight.com, and you can always go visit Leave It in the Ring. Make sure you register so that you're aware of the upcoming shows. Like this Thursday, we're going to have Marvelous Marvin Hagler on with us. I'm also going to be posting the Bernard Hopkins interview I did, along with Eric Morales. Okay, rundown real quick. One of the most important news right now is the Joe Louis Arena. Looks like that's going to be the place that's going to be holding Doral versus Arthur Abraham in Detroit, Michigan, March 27th. Now, hopefully it follows through because you heard what Doral said on Leaving the Ring this Thursday, last Thursday, saying that if he's not feeling up to it, guess what? The date will be pushed. So hopefully his back is up and healing. Okay, now Mickey Ramone goes against Golden Boy Antonio Escalante. Now it was a back and forth war. I mean, that was a good fight. That was obviously a fight just like we had Luis Colazo trainer on the line with us talking about, hey, that should have been on HBO with the scores of 97, 92, 96, 93 twice. You definitely got to say it was a good fight. And I got to say this, too. This is how good of a fight. A lot of times you see Oscar De La Hoya on ringside, and really, he just sits there, and he's kind of looking around and not really sure if he wants to be there or not. He was standing up with the matchmaker, Eric Gomez, and being very, very animated. Now, the other thing is this. Kaiser Mambuza makes an upset with Kendall Hall. Kendall Hall quits on the sixth round, and it was declared a six-round TKO. Mambuza took over on the third round. Now, I don't know what happened, why it wasn't televised. I don't know what happened with Kendall Hall. We were definitely going to try our hardest to get him on the line with this so we can find out, was there something physically wrong, or was Kaiser just a little bit too much? Mike Jones stayed undefeated, though, as the main event on Fox Sports. You know, going up against Henry I'm trying to run through this really quick, brothers, okay? So bear with me. One of these days, I'm going to get it right. One of these days, I'm not going to screw this up. But Henry forget it. I give up. I'm tired. You know what I'm saying? We've been out going at this for 3 hours, you know? Anyways, what's his name? Go ahead.
Harry Vercellus.
There you go. Okay, in Atlantic City, had a unanimous decision over him. Now, the thing with Rodolfo Vasquez KOs Marvin Sonsuna on a liver shot. Stops him at the 2-1 mark in the fourth round. Not whether, I don't know whether that was considered an upset, but definitely it was considered something of great for Refredo again going in. It was a junior for the weight bout. Now, I don't know if you heard about this, but Ronnie Shields looks like he's going to be the head trainer for Thomas Adamek for his scheduled date with the Nightmare, which is on April 24th. Whether if it's good or bad, I don't know, but I tell you what, we are definitely going to discuss it on Thursday's show to find out what the Hardcore Fight fans think and what, you know, Strike and Chris and everybody else that's on the panel, what they think about this, having a new trainer come in and want what you have to consider his biggest test and his biggest fight in career right now to date. So I don't know if it's good or bad. That's kind of in the iffy. Jorge Travieso Arce is the face Cristian Mijares April 10th in Durango, Mexico. Now, obviously, both of those guys are kind of been in the decline in their career. So this is kind of honestly a make and break fight between those two guys. So let's see what happens. Let's go real quick with Wodell Mayo and Omar Nino. Omar Nino, it was ended on a technical draw. No, Nino threw a shot that landed below, and Mayo was looking for him, for the ref, Vic to step in and put a halt to it, but didn't, and Nino threw a left hook, which knocked him out cold, put him on the canvas, so immediately in the flyweight fight, they declared a technical draw, so hopefully they'll be able to fix that up. Anyways, we're off here, we're off the air, this is Leaving the Ring.